This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
In wrestling, indies, and international. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy, man. Timothy, what's going on, my man?
Oh, doing good. I've had a good time. The heat seems to be broken here in California, so it's not as hot in Los Angeles as it was a couple weeks ago. But, I mean, we've been off for a week. We missed an episode, and that's because you were having way more fun than me, Pete. You want to tell everybody about what you've been up to?
Yeah, man. I was at the Scenic City 2017. And, it was a great time, a great show. I think more people, there's a lot of people traveled out. It was a great get-together for Twitter, for the Death Valley Driver Boys, for Pro Wrestling Only, just putting faces to names and stuff. It's really weird how all these different type of cliques kind of got together. There's like your Orlando clique, and then you have your, you had your Tennessee clique, then you had people from, like, Death Valley Driver clique, and then you had your Pro Wrestling Only clique, all out there to support a product, and a friend, of course, in Dylan, who's pretty much the common denominator out of it all, and it was a really great time, great two shows. I also went to see the Southern Underground Pro show also, which was a lot of fun. Have you seen the video of Bad Boy Janela singing Kurt Stallion has a tiny ass dick?
No, is that where the country music record meme and all that stuff is based on? Oh, I missed this.
It came from something, and it was fucking hilarious. I mean, I was dying. Honestly, it was really one of the funniest things I've seen in pro wrestling, and that happened at the sub show, and the irony was the fuckers went 45 fucking minutes in their match, and of course Kurt Stallion wins with, guess what he won with?
Canadian Destroyer?
Small package.
Oh. For his tiny dick, yeah. Oh, I should have known.
After kicking out of like fucking 8 billion fucking moves, I couldn't fucking believe what I was seeing. But for pure entertainment, I'm not gonna touch up much on the sub show because we have so much, and there's a good chance we'll review it for on when it comes up on the High Spot show. But man, a lot of hard workers. Joey Janela live. I saw him on that in night one of Scenic City, and I'm now a big-time fan of his because his charisma really, it's really unique, and he really entertained the fuck out of me, and it was really cool. But hey, man, I want to talk about Scenic City. First off, there's obviously the Scenic City Invitational, and they had Papa Hales was kind of in charge of like the fan get together type of thing. So I get into town Thursday night, and my boy Ben, follow him over on let me get his damn Twitter off my freaking thing real quick, because he was the host with the most, and really a cool dude. Boston Nuga on Twitter. He was the point man for us, and let us stay at his place. I had a total blast with him. I mean, it was pretty much my crew for that weekend. It was me, him, Eduardo from the Pro Wrestling Only. I think he's that far something other on Twitter. I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm going to pull up everybody's. Met a cool dude named Nick. He rode with us most of the places. And Keith Harris from one of the big England boys, UK boys. You probably know him more over at the board? Not the board, but the
he works for Cage Side Seats.
Yes, you'll know him from Cage Side Seats. Really nice guy, mathematician. He's never seen Parv either, so it's odd that I'm not from the UK, yet I've met a UK wrestling fan, and Parv hasn't. Now, I guess that's not that big of a leap. So that was really my traveling crew for most of the time. And but yeah, so like night one was like most of the wrestlers and most of the fans were staying at the Best Western, and Papa Hales rented out like I forget what the exact term, but it's kind of like, you know, a boardroom or like the conference room. And there was like karaoke and a lot of talking. A lot of the wrestlers came by and said hi and shot the shit. And there's a lot of beer drinking. One poor guy drank too much where he was like throwing up in a garbage can and stuff in the middle of the room. Poor kid. I mean, the kid was obviously 21, but I was like, man, it's just, you don't want to be that guy, you know, but it freaking happened to the guy. And there, you know, karaoke, there's a lot of talk about wrestling. A bunch of the Scenic City guys came by. Scott Hensley came by. And here we are. So they're all really easygoing, real approachable, and talked to Scenic City with everybody. So that was really cool. Then, like, day two, which is Friday, which is the day one of the show, there was like trivia contest and they'd meet up in the room again. There was interviews. I believe Bix and David and Zellner recorded two of Between the Sheets live screenings. Some of the Wrestle with Words guys did interviews. The CWF Mid-Atlantic crew was real easy to talk to. They were there for interviews. Tank was there doing interviews. Gunner, who else? Corey Hollis, all those guys were a real company. The Carnies freaking was ridiculous, man. They have like this huge freaking cult following. Where the fans, they're almost like the Pied Pipers. Wherever they're playing, the fans come and stuff. And so that was super fun. And then after the tournament, there was like another big one. It was just really neat, really interactive. The wrestlers don't have to come out for that, but man, they really came out in droves and spent time with the fans. And it was really, really totally interactive feeling. It was like, honestly, I put that and going to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame up on like kind of like the same level as so much fun. It was more fun doing that because I was with people and getting to meet people and stuff was super cool, as opposed to when I went to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame by myself. It was different. But I will say I'm more of a fan of like old school wrestling. So I was more of a mark for like the Houston wrestlers and the older school wrestlers than what the Scenic City guys did. But I could totally understand. I think I'd probably be in the minority on that, where I think most people would be marking out to be able to talk to Matt Riddle and to Gunner and Anthony Henry and the Gary J and Jason Cade and Dominic Guarinini and that, like. So I just want to put the fan fest over all 3 days. Super strong. I mean, it's great, especially when you're like, you know, traveling to to a town, and you know you're going to shows, and you have a lot of, I mean, yeah, there's some wrestling shows at night, but you have a lot of downtime, and it's really cool just getting together with the whole. I mean, honestly, I mean, there was probably up to 150 people, a couple. I don't know about 150, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was like 100 people in that room at one point. All wrestling fans, all connected to Dylan or Papa Hales in some form or fashion, and all just out there to support the Scenic City. So it was really neat seeing that type of things and having things to do, not just going to shows that night where you have a lot of downtime all day. Well, here they had stuff to fulfill you with, so you're not having to, you know, sightsee or go to a movie or what have you. They had plenty of time, things filled for the wrestling fan. But man, the wrestling, I'm going to get to that. First, it's East Hamilton Gym, gymnasium. It's a really, really nice southern gym, plenty of seating. Night two outdrew night one, but both nights I think drew pretty darn well. I didn't get Dylan running the Scenic City guys to give me confirmation on that. But from my eyes on like night two, I mean, there was like freaking thing was packed to the rafters and stuff. So I know they had to be over the moon on night two and had to have been happy on night one and stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if they had over 1,000 people both nights. Not each night, but combined over 1,000 people. So they really did a great job, raised money for that school. And now let's talk about the show, man. I want to say night one was a really smart show. It had good wrestling, a lot of emotion, because this was Tank. It was obvious. I don't want to say it was obvious, but, you know, you felt Tank was going to go out losing to one of the best young talents in wrestling right now in Matt Riddle. So you had good wrestling, a lot of emotion. I felt the card was really smartly booked. I felt that we got a wide variety of matches, which I thought was fantastic. You know, like one of the things I've been bitching about Wrestle Circus lately, and I'm not just going to say Wrestle Circus, I'll say it a lot of wrestling shows in general, I get real samey. And I felt Scenic City had a lot of different things to offer. So it did a good job in that, where they, you know, they had a brawl, they had a technical match, they had a high flying match, you know, they had a little bit of everything. And which made it the card fly by quick. I think both nights, each show was like 3 hours max, and it flew by, man. We opened up with the Lynch brothers, and it was just a good, smart match. I felt they could have done a little bit more mirror spots or counters of counters as the brothers, but and maybe teasing a little of like dissension, like the match is about to break down any minute. I thought they did a good job. I just wasn't blown away by it. I gave it 2.25. Then we got Jason Kincaid versus another local guy, Torque. I enjoyed it more than the first match. I thought Torque did what he needed to do, and we got a nice taste of Kincaid. I enjoyed these for what they were. We were first and second match card. I know they're like maybe the 2.5-star match. And again, I liked how it built. I mean, it started smarter and smarter, and then it got better and better. And the third match was Dominic Greeny versus Eric Royal. And you know what? I absolutely love this match. It was my favorite match of night one. I gave it 3.75 stars. They meshed so well, and it felt so awesome because, you know, we're both CWF Mid-Atlantic fans. I've put over Eric Royal. I've put over the ace, like, constantly of being, like, probably one of, if not the best guys who talk smack to the crowd or really interacts well with the crowd better than probably anybody on the planet right now. I actually did a run-in on the Wrestling with Words podcast, and they asked for questions. Of course, I ran through, and Royal was asking one thing, so I talked to him about it. And, you know, and then one of my comparisons was I compared him to Butch Reed and a little bit of Tully Blanchard. And that's what I kind of feel, what I'm getting out of Royal. And here it was Dom's the face, Royal's the heel. Royal cheats right before he hits his finisher. Loved it. I mean, I thought that was the best finish of the whole entire All Night One. Where you have Royal, he's just working the crowd. And the best part is, not only was Dom hitting these great submissions and stuff out of nowhere, they turned into like hope spots. Like, he almost turned into a prototype babyface working an MMA gimmick, because the way Royal worked them and the way they presented the submissions was all of a sudden he'd come out of nowhere and hit one. It was almost like a babyface, like kind of get almost like making a comeback, you know. So, and then Royal would get control. So they made the submissions hope spots, and it was just freaking tremendous. I thought the structure of the match was incredible, really spot on. Of All Night One, I thought the psychology here was the best out of everything. Where the submissions were worked and used as hope spots were, again, tremendous. Even with Royal on top, you never counted Dom out, because at any moment, boom, he could hook a heel hook. He could lock on a triangle, anything. I mean, it was just so great. And he got Dom over as a Southern never give up baby fight face while working that shooter gimmick, which I didn't think was possible. I mean, it just doesn't, you know, would you ever like compare him, like Matt Riddle as the MMA background? Would you ever consider him like this Southern baby face?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't see it. I guess I could see how you might be able to pull it off, but that at the same time, it does sound out of this world. But Dominic's interview that I just recently heard on Tanner from Wrestling Twitter's podcast, I think it's All You Can Hear podcast, Dom just really sounds like a super smart student of the game wrestler. It's really funny because he's already training the students at the AIW school. And it's just, like, Riddle got a lot of buzz coming out, being this shooter guy background, all this. But in some ways, I think Dominic is more of the, like, the wrestler who's going to be in it for the long haul with the shoot background. So I could definitely see how they're able to pull that off just with someone who understands the game as well as he does.
Yeah, because the thing with Dom, now this is the first time I've seen him live. Have you seen him live before?
I unfortunately have not gotten a chance to see him live just yet.
So let me preface that by saying, A, now I'm a huge fan. I was already a fan going into it because, like, I believe this match was, like, I believe this and the Gary J. Anthony Henry were my two matches I was most looking forward to in round one. These guys didn't disappoint. They didn't make me look like an ass by proclaiming that earlier, so thank you. With that said, Dom has this all shucks type of personality, which that's what I've seen on video. So I think he needs to work his charisma a little bit, or maybe come across a little bit more confident. I'm not sure what it is. Looks like he's working on his body. He needs probably, must tone it up a little bit because he has that wrestler's body. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's a little stocky, a little doughy.
But he looked like he's tidying her up. But yeah, it's like he seems like he's understanding the game. And obviously working with Royal, who's just a pro's pro, helped. And yeah, and Dominic got over huge on night one because of it and stuff. And I mean, again, that match I thought was incredible. And one of my great moments was booing the shit out of Dom, and Dom pretty much telling me to shut the hell up. Made my day. And stuff. Then we got Stallion versus Jason Cade. I knew these guys would mesh well. I prefer Stallion working with the smaller guys because he's like which is odd. He comes across as a mega star. He has charisma, but he feels like he is influenced by Shibata a shit ton, and I can buy into that. When he's working the smaller guys, but when he's working the bigger guys, sometimes it's like, man, he just shit canned all his offense. And live, you get into it. But if you're like a real smart mark, like myself, you look at it and you're like, hey, man, you just shit canned this, you shit canned that. I enjoyed Cade. I thought he did a really good job. I mean, when you look at him, you're not going to think heel. But he worked all his high spots around cheating, which I liked. I liked how he'd cheat to then hit a big dive. Or he told us he wasn't going to dive because we haven't bought enough merch from him. I mean, that's pretty funny. I mean, that's not how I would have healed it up, but it got over, especially with the seating arrangements, which is, I think, most of the people on the front row were the hardcores who traveled. So, I mean, he wasn't screaming that out to, like, the bleacher seats. But he was, working the first and second row. And so I enjoyed that. I kind of wish Stallion would focus more on what made Shibata great and realize that Shibata's not this complete wrestler that he had. I hate shitting on Shibata since he's out, with a freaking brain aneurysm. But take what he does well and then look at other guys that did other things well and mesh that style. Like, I look at Kurt Stallion and he screams to me, young Barry Windham, young, like, David Von Erich, guys who are thin right now, who, like, Barry Windham was a skinny motherfucker And he grew into that weight and got bigger. And I feel Stallion is going to be very similar. And look at what Wyndham did. I mean, the guy had great offense for the 80s, but you know what? He was a great seller. I wish Stallion would take some of the selling tropes that that Wyndham had. But again, another really good match, 3.25 stars. And then we get a Darby versus Joey match, which was great and totally different. It was like the wild spectacle match. They used chairs and weapons and stuff. And you know, in a tournament setting, I could totally buy the fact that the ref is going to be lenient because it's a tournament setting. But in the booking things, they did have a scramble night two in case a match went to the draw or some or two people got disqualified or whatever, so no one would have a cakewalk in. So with that said, I thought the rules could have been enforced a little bit more. Another thing that bothered me was they had these chairs that they were going to use later for a spot they were in the ring, and it bothers me because A, the ref should have kicked him out. As a referee, you need to kick out the chairs. So make it logical on why they're going to use the chairs. So I felt the ref really hurt the match because I thought from a entertainment and connecting to the crowd, I felt this match was the best match of the night, but it didn't have the psychology and the connective tissue that Eric and Dominic had, so it hurt because you had to make excuses on why certain things were happening. Like, example would be, why are there chairs in the ring? Why are they allowing not enforcing the time limit rule laws? I mean, just little things you had to question because they weren't doing that. But still, most exciting match from night one, and I can totally understand why other people who aren't hung up on logic, which is one of my things. I can see them saying this was the best match of the night one. I get 3.75, and if they would have, I felt if they could have, tightened up the psychology a little bit, this could have been like one of these all-time great spectacle matches, because freaking Darby does a freaking coffin dive from the rafters. We get some duct tape, we get chair shots, we get Canadian destroyers on chairs. There's a lot going on here to like. And then we got Gunner versus Mark, Shane Marks. Perfect location on the card. A totally different style where you had Gunner comes out playing heel, which was a nice little, it was interesting. The only thing that didn't work for me on Gunner playing heel was he had a lot of family and friends in the crowd. So even though he's healing it up, they're still cheering him on, and then he'd like go hug his old teacher or might have been his mom, I have no idea. So those little things hampered it a little for me for live. And you know what? On the video on demand, they might not even pick up on the fact that he's going out and hugging a fan when he's being a heel. So that's just something you pick up on the live experience. I thought this was interesting because you remember night one, I thought Gunner had. The night one was the worst match of the whole entire tournament. You remember that one?
Yeah, from last year's with
Yeah.
oh God, what was the guy's name? Judas Macias.
Yes. And this one was much smartly worked. They let Gunner work on top. Mark sold most of the way. Really strong psychology, and Mark sold really well for him. Still, I thought even go Gunner was on top. He needs to come up with some stuff to keep things interesting. And by interesting, I'm not saying do more high spots, but maybe if he's where his finisher is kind of like the goal, it's like it's either the spear or the jackhammer. And you know what? Do some stuff like, grab the man's tights and throw a forearm to the back, drop a knee on the back, drop an elbow on the back, but anything more than a give me more than a bear hug here and there. And so I thought some of the transitions could have been better, but I still thought they did a pretty damn good job. 2.5 stars, and a much much marked improvement from Gunner night one. And he didn't seem nervous, seemed pre he had a superstar written all over him live and stuff. And then we get Anthony Henry versus Gary J. Another strong match. Great strikes, big moves, told a story. Gary got over huge as a babyface here, where the crowd loved him. Henry tried as a heel, but it needs a little bit more work in connecting to the crowd. And maybe because Gary was such an over babyface, it just seemed like Henry was trying, but it just didn't connect all the way. But I felt Gary J's connection was amazing for a guy who's not working the area all that often. I mean, I know he's been there here and there, but they treated him like almost like a hometown babyface. How well he got over, the strikes here were great. The dives are great. The grappling was really good. I felt Henry kind of lacked in charisma compared to Gary J. And I think Henry's a charismatic guy. I think maybe he just needs to make it a little larger at times. I felt he was maybe being a little too subtle on the heel, where you knew he was trying to be heel, but it just wasn't expressive enough. And then in the final, we get Riddle versus Tank, and my God, the first 30 seconds to 2 minutes of this, you thought Tank was going to pull it off. I mean, the storytelling and how it was laid out right off the bat, Tank almost pulls off the miracle, hits the game-winning buzzer with three men on him. He hits the walk-off home run and almost knocks out fucking Matt Riddle. Freaking loved it. And then because Tank almost takes it off early, all the near falls mattered. And it was fun to watch Riddle work a more storyline dictated match as opposed to using his athleticism. Here he actually had to work it smarter because Tank is, you know, he's a veteran who has an aura about him. And so Riddle, the most important thing Riddle could do was not disrespect that aura, and he didn't. And that's what I thought was great. Tank played his role freaking spot on. He believed he had a chance to pull off that one last big win. Big 3.5-star match. Showed Riddle in this tournament showed so much freaking versatility. And this was just step one here on it. And they had this big old schmoz, big match. And we got this great final moment with Tank, you know, taking off his boots because it was his retirement. I thought the show was perfectly structured. Lately, you know, like I last Wrestle Circus. I mean, I hate to go back to fucking Wrestle Circus. But that last rant I did on their show and the last couple was about match structure and structuring a card. City guys structured this card perfect. I mean, there was not one thing I would have done differently on night one when it comes to card structure. It was laid out perfect. And I just want to say I got, by when I'm saying that, I got a match 4 and 5 backwards. So they're actually, were in different order. But the structure of the card was just done so well. I thought Tank, even though I wasn't grown up on Tank, I watched him in Wild Side, but I wasn't from the area, so it wasn't a guy I was seeing weekly, week in, week out. But man, I was damn emotional when he'd taken off those boots and watching Matt Riddle put him over and all the boys coming out. It was a really nice done. I thought night one was, again, it was like a perfect taste for night two, where they gave us plenty of action, but not enough to burn you out for night two. I've been to many of shows where they were at the same building back to back and they ran way too hot of a card night one, where they come back. And you'll see that a lot at WrestleMania weekend, where the crowd just gets burned out because they just saw this super hot show night the one previous night, and now they had to come back and follow it. And here, they gave you just enough really strong wrestling to give you a taste of what night two is going to be about. And the thing about the match is, I felt five different people could honestly pick five different matches for match of the night. And that's how, again, I guess back to the how varied the matches are and how different they were worked. And all depending on what type of taste you get into, where somebody, I could make a live match what I thought was the best. You could pick somebody if you saw it. Any one of us. And that was funny, was in the car ride home, I had the four guys, all like Darby and the Darby match, and Janela as their first. My favorite was Royal and Dominic. I've heard people say Stallion Kate was their favorite. I heard people say Tank and Riddle was their favorite. I even heard Gary J. Anthony Henry's name mentioned. So that's what made the damn tournament so cool. You could get invested in a match and you could argue just and can discuss it with people afterwards. And it all depends on what your thing is. Like for me, I'm a big on logic and storytelling. That's why Dominic and Royal totally got intimate. I can understand. I can totally understand the point of view of thinking Darby and Janela was the best match. It wasn't for me, but that's the whole entire thing about this tournament was it had a little bit of something for everybody, and you could totally totally get it. Night two. Okay. We open up with Dominic versus Corey Hollis, and I thought this was a perfect opener. Both guys played their roles really good. Hollis was this shitbag heel, small guy. Dominic was, again, the baby face. Hollis destroyed Dom's, worked on Dom's leg and ankle. But, of course, to get the advantage, he was always cheating. Loved it. Dom, again, was able to make his submissions mean things and mean so much by going after Hollis. I mean, it was just so smartly worked. And again, Dom got over with the crowd. Hollis was great at presenting the submissions at great hope spots also. And I really liked the finish of the match, but not here, where I felt Dom kind of got, you know, he originally was Martin Stone was in a spot in the tournament. So he kind of, I don't want to say he backdoored in because that's just not fair, but he originally wasn't booked for the tournament. And then to have him lose in the opener of night two kind of said, yeah, he really wasn't. He didn't deserve to be in the tournament. That's from the outside looking in. Maybe they have plans going forward on something else. But I felt it kind of – and I totally understand Hollis is from the area. He has history with the Scenic City. So I understand you want to protect Hollis too. But I felt it was just a tough situation. They put both guys in. And it kind of made Dom look underserving on the spot.
I heard from some people that this was quite the matchup and possibly even the match of the second night. Would that be kind of crazy to even put it in that regard?
From psychology wise, no. I thought it was a perfect opener. I gave it 3 stars. The match only went like 4.5 minutes, 5 minutes. But it seemed like it went a lot longer because of the story that was being told, where I want to see these guys wrestle again. I'll tell you that much. I thought they connected great. I thought they had great chemistry with one another. But my mind again was, again, I felt Dom needed a little bit of protecting and made kind of and then I thought the finish was a little similar to the Royal finish. So it made Dom kind of look like a dumb baby face for falling for it again, you know, which we'll go back to making a babyface look smarter later on. But I still thought it was a great match, and I could totally see somebody thinking it was the best match of the night. I didn't. But I thought it was a fantastic match. Then we get this tag match of Tough Guys, Inc. Versus, I can't remember who they worked. They're a local tag team. I thought this was they connected to the crowd, but on a totally different way than Dominic and Hollis did. This is more wrestling with comedy in it, and they connected it in that fashion. So I thought for what it needed to be, it worked. I give it another like 2.5-star match. It's funny because all four wrestlers looked identical. Where Timothy, if they mugged me, if I didn't know who they were, I'd have a damn hard time picking them out of the lineup. You know, I'd hate I would have hated to be the victim of their pickpockets and having to go pick him out of a lineup, because these guys even did a comedy spot where I think it was either Hughes or the other guy punched his partner because he couldn't get him. He thought he was the playoff lookalike. Yeah,
I'm gonna look forward to hearing the commentary on this one.
Yeah, so it was like we were all laughing, and it was Bob Evans. Yeah, Bob Evans punched his partner, thinking it was the same one of the guys, because it was. So there we go. Then we get match three, Riddle versus Gunnar Miller. This is what I'm talking about by a smart baby face. Match night of the one, not match, when Riddle faced Tank, Tank caught Riddle right off the bat and almost pinned him, right? This time Gunnar came at him with the spear, and Miller, And Riddle gets his knee up, stops Gunnar cold, right? All right. That's from learning from a match from the previous night and making your baby face look smart. So Dom looked kind of dumb, falling for the same trick night one and night two. They fell for night one. And this also is a throwback, and I someone had to point it out to me. And then I went back, because I hadn't watched Scenic City in like forever, but that was the opening spot of Gunner and Lynch last year, was Gunner hitting Lynch with the spear and Lynch just not quite being able to overcome it. Do you remember that spot?
No, I don't really remember that being the big spot, because I do remember Lynch having a couple spots. I don't know, maybe. I don't remember
it now. Yeah, it's like I felt bad, because, you know, I'm like, you know, when they brought it up to me, I'm like, damn, you're right, after watching it again. But it's just, I hadn't watched it in so long. You know, when you watch so many matches, it kind of blurs. But it's a key spot and a key part of storytelling that I missed when I first thought about it. But for me, I remembered what Tank did right off the bat. And I thought Riddle's need of stopping Gunner right off the bat was incredible. This match, I think, might have been the smartest booked match I've ever seen or seen this year. Because Gunner gets pretty much knocked the fuck out with the knee right off the bat. So you have Gunner playing heel, but having to sell. And you have Matt Riddle working on top, who might be the best offensive wrestler in the world right now. I don't think that's hyperbole, do you?
No.
I mean, I'm not saying. You might find other people. Like, you might find Zack Sabre better because he has more submissions and or what have you. But I think Riddle, when it comes to his offense, where he has a shit ton of fucking offensive moves. I mean, from suplexes to running knees to strikes to whatever. I mean, Riddle has a gigantic arsenal. So he's working on top, right? So it felt like he was like, okay, kid, give me your five best moves. And that's kind of what we got here. We had Riddle running off offense on top, giving Gunner hope spots, and not just hope spots, but fucking dynamic hope spots, like a spear, a jackhammer. Freaking catches him and does a freaking throw and tosses him into a German. So what we had was a total sprint with Riddle working on top and giving Gunner a spot here or there. And that popped the crowd every time, because it was a big high impact, holy shit type of move. This was pretty much structured very similar to Brock and Goldberg, except a lot better, because Riddle is a lot better offensively than Brock, I think. And the fact that Gunner is more athletic than Bill Goldberg, a 60-year-old, however Goldberg is, 55-year-old. Bill Goldberg at this point, who people still bought into the Goldberg aura, very similar to Gunner. They bought into this badass aura, and you have this thing. This thing was incredible. 4.5 stars. I mean, and it wasn't like this 15-minute match. I think it was like between 5 and 7 minutes, and it was freaking phenomenal. I mean, it was like laid out so picture perfect, and the payoffs. Every payoff freaking mattered. incredible. I thought it was, I haven't watched a shit ton of Gunnar Miller, but it definitely felt like the best Gunnar Miller match I'd ever seen. And again, we see Riddle work another completely different match than the first. Here, Gunnar looked great in this, like, looked great in a loss. Match helped both guys. I thought that the timing of Gunnar's big moves were just perfect. Finish was absolutely amazing. Total clash of titans. You know, like, you're like, it's almost like you're thinking these guys can go up into the sky and grab a lightning bolt. It felt like it was like Thor versus the Incredible Hulk in that type of manner. Crowd was absolutely electric, batshit crazy, going absolutely nuts. 4.5 stars. These guys had the match of the weekend for me. Freaking big time offensive sprint and play to both guys' strengths. And Gunnar Miller looked like a can't miss blue chip fucking stud out of this. And so now it's in his court. He needs to get out, travel, work on his craft. One of the questions I asked him, and he's a former football player. His dad, I think it's super cool. He goes, records all his matches. They go home, and he watches it just like game film. So, I mean, he's putting in the time, putting in the hours, working on it. Now he's just got to learn why, how, when, and what to do, man. I mean, he has to look. You buy into him as a badass. He's going, he's looking at the films and stuff. You know what? Maybe he just doesn't need to be watching his own film. Maybe he should watch some other people's films and steal some of the stuff that people did long ago that people aren't doing now. What's new is what's old is new again, brother. Except we got Eric Royal versus Stallion. Again, I loved it because Johnny P came over to sit next to me for this match and the Gunner match, and we're shooting shit. And me and Johnny P are doing the business to Eric Royal. Where, like, he even has this fucking grin on his face. Like, I can't believe these fucking honkies are booing the shit out of me. I mean, it felt like we were at the fucking world-class sportatorium booing the living shit out of him. I mean, fucking, I really hope the camera catches us because we looked absolutely like we wanted to freaking find where his car was parked and slash his tires. He was getting so much fucking nuclear heat from us. But that said, I thought they kind of had a styles clash where Royal works that old school style, talking trash to the fans, you know, while working a hold, while talking shit to the crowd, blah, blah, blah. And Stallion's more of a, like a go-go style. I already compared him to Shibata, really heavy strike style. And it just felt like, you know, he was selling underneath early on, but when he made his comeback, he kind of shit-canned all of Royal's work on top, and it just didn't work. It just did not just didn't work for me. I gave it 2.5 stars. It was a match I was really looking forward to. I just I blame Royal for I just didn't think these guys clicked. And Johnny P was with me. He goes, I'm just not seeing what a lot of people see in Stallion. And I see a lot of Stallion, but I just think he needs to drop some of the habits I don't like. But a lot of people, I mean, you've seen the online buzz about the guy. He gets a lot of online hype, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a lot of people are really into him. I think he's got a good look sometimes, and then other times I can't tell what's going on. I don't know. It's like, it's such a weird thing. And I think, yeah, like you said, he's got some bad habits. You would think with him being kind of part of the Hales clan, he wouldn't be so, or, you know, being affiliated with the Hales clan people, that he wouldn't be so seemingly like obsessed with some of the bad parts about 90s All Japan type matches. But he really seems like he is. And it is kind of disconcerting at the moment. I'm hoping to see some more growth from him, but so far, I don't see him at the same level as a lot of other people, but I do think he has quite a bit of potential.
Yeah, he has top guy potential. I just think he needs to work on some of those flaws that I pointed out, and I think you've seen him too. Then we get Lynch versus Kincaid, and this is another strong match, man. Both guys, I thought, meshed well. Lynch was a great base here for all of Kincaid's wacko offense. I thought Lynch really grounded the match and made me care in the bout. He showed me even more versatility here. Watching performance here made me believe that he could go all the way in the tournament. And he's a guy who needs higher profile bookings. He came across like he could work a lot of different styles here in this tournament. And again, I could see an argument for people telling me he was the MVP of the tournament. I could buy into that argument. He's not mine. But I thought he had a great match here. Goes over, and now he's in the finals. Then we get Anthony Henry and Darby Allin. I really love the structure of this match. They start off with exchanging mat work on the ground. Really, it was really some World of Sport-esque type of mat work. And I gotta say, Darby got over with me more than just a stunt worker. And it's a shame that he does rely on the stunts so often, where the guy is a great babyface and he can mat wrestle. I still don't understand the gimmick of the half paint, half not emo thing going. I don't even know if it's emo. That's because I don't understand the gimmick. But he earned my respect in this tournament, and I thought he had another really strong match here with Henry. The guys had one little like hiccup, like one little thing where Henry got caught up in the ropes and Henry didn't quite recover real well and gracefully and didn't look real pretty. Where Henry tried to cover and Darby sort of froze, but overall still a strong match, 3.5 stars. But what's really funny is I've been high on Anthony Henry, and in both his matches, he had two good matches, right? But I felt his opponent outshined him in both matches, which surprised me, because going into this tournament, Henry was the guy I was really looking forward to. And maybe I put too much expectation on him, or maybe he might have had a slight off night. I mean, it wasn't like he had a bad night, but I felt he had two good solid matches. I thought he was the most. I thought by star ratings, besides Riddle, I thought Henry might have been in the most consistent matches all weekend. But with that said, I enjoyed coming out of both all of his matches. I enjoyed somebody more than him in those things. Then we get this. We get the great tank retirement thing again. It was great. Really, really felt magical. Then we get this scramble match, right? This did nothing for me, honestly. I mean, I understand it was booked kind of because of a last-minute Joey Janela not having to fly out, so they wanted to question things and keep us all on edge, all the smart fans. But everybody came out together, so not one person got a special entrance. Gary J lost in the first round and he got the wrestle in it again. Excuse me, and he got a huge pop. But it just didn't feel like anybody really got over. It was just a lot of brawling outside, some fighting in the thing. And it was in a tough position because it couldn't be the wild brawl, because that was going to be the Carnies matches up next, and they're doing a street fight. So they weren't going to be able to out-brawl them. And then the final match of the card, the four-way, was a total spot fest. So the scramble couldn't be a spot fest. With that said, they don't have the history of like Mid-Atlantic where they're running weekly, where they could do, they don't want, you know how Mid-Atlantic sometimes will have like a 6-person match, but it's all storyline dictated because they have so much stuff going on. You know what I'm saying about Mid-Atlantic?
Yeah, I've talked about that many times where Mid-Atlantic gets by a lot of times with the booking of their match making more sense because you know the background and the investment in the characters.
Yeah, and that's what it was lacking on this one. So it was they were in a lose-lose position, and it did absolutely nothing for me. The only thing I might have changed differently was maybe open the show with it. You don't want to open up with a match that no one cares about either, just because it was just in a tough position here. Then we get the Carnies and versus in a street fight, and this is my first time seeing the Carnies live, right? And I've heard the talking point, best unsigned tag team. At first, I'm like, no, it's extra talented. That's the best unsigned tag team. Watching the Carnies live, I get it now, man. Very entertaining tag team live. They had a great brawl. We saw them use fire. I've never seen fire. So a fireball spot got over huge. Nick freaking Iggy diving from the rafters in front of these little kids through a table. I thought this was about as good of a street fight as you could have done in a high school gym where there's for a fundraiser, because you know you couldn't be bleeding and you couldn't be doing this and this. But with that said, I thought their charisma was off the charts. Super fun brawl, 3.5 stars. They the Carnies, I can buy them as the best unsigned tag team in wrestling right now. After that, we get intermission. So all we have left is one match. Like I was saying, I might have given the scramble to open and maybe put Dominic and Hollis in after the intermission and then the main event. It just felt weird to just go right to the main event after intermission. But they totally protected this main event because the main event was a total big move style match. It was protected well, especially with how the crowd was structured. And live, I totally got into it. On tape, I'll probably nitpick on some stuff. Because I mean, live, I know when I'm watching, I know you're more forgiving live on no selling and stuff because you get caught up into it, and that's what we got here. They opened up with the four of the guys. We're all just like kicking and chopping the shit out of each other, allowing them like, "Hey, hit me," type stuff. And you know, that's one of my least favorite things. I'm not a big fan of that. I'm not a big fan of people kicking the shit out of each other. I knew going into the match that Stallion and Riddle at one point were going to be doing no sell German suplexes because they're both fucking guilty as charged on that spot. And I think they rolled off 9 rolling Germans in a row on each other. But I fucking loved it. I mean, it was fucking awesome. Live. But, you know, I'm like, fuck, I can't believe they fucking did it. I knew it was going to happen. Because, I mean, I think we've had many a show with Matt Riddle where I say, God, I hate when he fucking no-sells that fucking, does the pop-up German. And Stallion is just as guilty as Riddle as this spot. And they fucking did it to the extreme. I thought Lynch really was the glue of the last few minutes. And ended up being Lynch and Riddle. We were thinking maybe Lynch has a chance of pulling off the upset as the hometown hero. I also enjoyed all the shining up the guys did for Lynch. They had this absolutely incredible guardrail spots where they're beating each other. All of the guys are beating the shit out of each other and on the guardrail. Fucking Riddle's selling his ass off and Henry goes to do a fucking kick and Riddle fucking belly to, you know, does a, I think, no, yeah, overhead belly to belly suplex and tosses Henry blindly over the rail into the freaking into the crowd. I thought that was a pretty awesome spot. But into the crowd by landing on the floor. He didn't go into the crowd, but that was awesome. I thought Henry's work on the apron was great, putting over the strikes and stuff. Thought Stallion's charisma was off the charts here, even in there with a Matt Riddle, who has, you know, he's one of the most charismatic guys around. When Henry was eliminated, I was like, fuck, like almost like I felt like I got sucker punched because I felt he was going to win. So we have all that going on. And then ends up Riddle ends up winning it. And I was a little surprised because I'm predicting Matt Riddle will be working Suzuki at the Dome this year, next year. But we'll see. you know, Matt Riddle, he is a guy who's gone been to Scenic City now back-to-back years. He brought his whole, I should have known because his whole family was there, kids and stuff. So I doubt he's bringing him out to a tournament, even though it's a work to watch a bunch of blues in a tournament. So I should have seen the writing on the wall. But with that said, I thought it was accidentally booked the show. I didn't think Riddle had a chance at winning because I thought he was too big of a name. But when you think about it, he does. He's been there back-to-back years. It's a good name to put on the trophy and gives the tournament even more prestige in a way. And man, in a great night too, honestly. Night one and night two, great wrestling shows. And when it comes out, I believe it's coming out on Powerbomb TV. If you're not subscribed, man, subscribe. You'll get two great nights of wrestling. And then they're running the Scenic City Trios in November. And I recommend anybody who was on the fence coming out, man, they'll be there next year. I'm coming back out. You got me as a fan for life now, unless the booking goes to shit, which I don't see happening, or if the talent pool, you know, dries up. I had too much good of a time hanging out with my boys, hanging out, meeting new people. I mean, I can't put over enough how many new people I met and how fun it was talking to people. You know, I was talking about the cliques and stuff, but a lot of the cliques intermingled. Like us in the Mid-Atlantic clique intermingled all the time, had drinks, talk. It was great talking to JB about old school Carolina wrestling. There's so many different aspects and stuff to watch. And just like the Scenic City, man, CWF Mid-Atlantic, man, October 13th and 14th, Friday and Saturday, they're having their fan fest coming up, man. If you had fun at Scenic City, check out CWF. If you're a fan of CWF, come on down. I'm coming down. Timothy, you might be making it, right?
Yeah, it's looking very possible right now.
I mean, I'm not putting you can say, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's a maybe. You know, it's better than a no. Johnny P, Barbed Wire City's going to be there. JB, the town's going to be accessible. Talking to people, it's gonna be a blast, man. Come on down. There's gonna be Q&A, live podcasting, dinners, movies, trivia. It's gonna be a blast, man. So I'm coming out there. So be cool and show up. But hey, with that said, man, Scenic City, awesome. And then it followed up with Sup. We'll cover that again because we have a lot of shit we got to cover. But I will say, Joey Janela, Kurt Stallion has a tiny ass dick song. If you haven't seen it, fucking see it, get it, watch it. It happened live at Sup. Bastard wins with a small package in a 45 minute fucking wrestling match where anything happened in Sup. It's I thought David Biggs said it best. It's what FIP should be, but Sup does it better. And it doesn't have the payroll that FIP has. And draws a hell of a lot fucking more. And what did you say about it? Maybe about FIP?
Oh, yeah, when Bix was saying that, comparing it to FIP, I said, well, and imagine if Sup was able to regularly book Fred Yehi. You know what I mean? Like, they're so much better. And that's just one key talent that I'm pointing out. But just comparing the level of talent that they don't have access to, and yet the shows are just so much better.
Yeah, let me tell you, these guys on Sup worked their asses off. I believe the guy's name is AJ Gray. It was my first time live watching the dude. The guy has a high ceiling, man. I'm really impressed by him. The undercard was worked with really guys who worked hard. And, I mean, really, there was, like, strong matches up and down the card. These guys on the undercard really pushed the established talent on that card. Like, hey, look, we're not just curtain jerkers. We're here to learn and become better workers. And I got a vibe at the company that really wants to do good stuff. So support them, man. They're on the High Spot Network. With that said, brother, I think I was a little long-winded here. Why don't we just take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk some more CWF Mid-Atlantic, NXT, and of course, the G1. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, folks, we're back. And, man, just like I said, when Scenic City does hit, we'll do a review so we get Timothy's takes on it. And I want to review it on a video on demand. And when it hits Powerbomb TV, hopefully next week sometime, maybe we'll review it next week or the week after, and we'll cover it. If you want to hear Timothy's takes on it, not just my live experience, because I think wrestling is made for live viewing, but yeah, it's always cool to go back and watch it, back and see, man, I really misjudged this or that. So it'll be interesting. We're going to look at CWF, and guys, remember October 13th, 14th, over there, they're looking at trying to rent the luxury suite, which is badass, at the Sportatorium, for the Mid-Atlantic Fan Festival. Think about it, the old Smoky Mountain Wrestling, old fan events they used to have back then, and now we're going to do it with CWF, which is, it's a company. I mean, we review it every week, has a lot of buzz, a lot of great wrestlers. I mean, they have a deep talent of roster, and they got working hard, and they're really doing something special, and it feels cool to support them and stuff. And they're finally getting some, not finally, I mean, they're getting some online buzz about them because guess what? They use logical wrestling, and there's nothing wrong with that. If you guys have time, man, come out, for the Fan Fest, 13th, 14th of October. It's coming soon. Man, get your plane, train, automobile, bus, whatever it takes to get out there. They're getting a pretty good deal on hotels, trying to get the blocks of hotels. They're doing everything they can to make it as inexpensive as possible for you guys and for us, for me too. Come out there. We'll shoot the shit. Say hi. Have fun. Watch some great wrestling. And watch probably one of the best book shows that they do. They are incredible at booking. So be there, be square, folks. All right, man. CWF, we open up with Ethan Sharp versus Mitch Kana. What do you think of this?
I liked this quite a bit, actually, for Ethan Sharp kind of building up and being taken as a credible threat again. I think every now and then when he throws like some nice looking strikes and really mans up in the match, it looks good. There's specifically an uppercut in here that looked really good. I pretty much enjoyed this for the most part. I thought Connors was nice, kind of working him over, trying to be dominating over the younger guy, but Sharp didn't, he didn't let him just have the match like you might expect would happen here.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought this was, you know, the Connor, Mitch Connor, so the Crusher or Dick the Bruiser. I mean, he has that AWA, beer swilling, I can't move my neck type body build, and it's just a throwback body type. I thought this was a fun bout with people the audience cares about, you know. I go on and on and on about how important it is for the audience to care about you. You know what? Did these guys do one moonsault in this match, Timothy?
Yeah, no, not necessarily.
No. They got a good reaction because they had good characters and people cared. You know what? You don't need to freaking kill yourself to get over. There's all different ways, all different body types, all different looks can get over. And these guys, that's why the match got over, because the audience cares about these two. They're characters. Then we get this Priscilla Kelly interview. You know, she's getting there. I think she's a really pretty girl. I thought, what was the big hoopla on Twitter? Was she pissed that people were calling her Paige?
That makes sense. I didn't hear anything about it, but that does make sense.
I was like, yeah, so what? She looks a little like Paige. Who cares? That's not, I mean, she has black hair and she's thin, you know, pale. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't really look that much like Paige, but I could definitely see why people would make the comparisons, obviously.
And bottom line is, at least she's not, I mean, she's not in an abusive relationship or a bad, or in a relationship that's in the damn tabloids and stuff, so good for her. Leave the girl alone. You know, it was what it was. Did you get anything out of the promo?
Yeah, again, I agree with you. I like it. She's putting it together. I think she's definitely got a bright future. Especially being that she is a good-looking girl, so you know,
yeah.
I think she's got it. I think she can make something of it.
And we'll talk about her a little bit more later. I know next week's show that we're reviewing, we'll get to that later. But then we get Cam Carter with Smith Garrett, and I'm watching this. You know, Smith really impressed me when he were at CW the other day. A few weeks back, Cam Carter comes out. I'm like, man, I like this Garrett Carter. I like his character. And then squash.
Yeah.
Like, I invested in him. And then fucking Stutzy gives me a big fucking right cross across the face for Karen. I thought I laughed at myself that I got suckered in. What'd you make of this?
Yes.
Or am I crazy? I thought the character worked, though.
Yeah, no, I was actually excited. I think we've seen Cam a couple times here and there, but nothing much. I think I've seen him in some other companies as well, getting squashed right now just because he's young. And yeah, I was kind of hoping for more. He looked like he was going to have at least a little bit of a back and forth, but no, he's down under pretty quick and he's out.
Which leads us to Kane Justice, my front runner for Rookie of the Year. Is he your front runner?
Yeah, depending on if we can count him as a rookie, but yes, definitely.
I would count him. I mean, fuck, Meltzer counts guys who have 3 years in the biz, 4 years. I mean, he might have started like maybe a month or two last year or whatever it was, right? I guess right before Battlecade, maybe?
Yeah, and also, from what I hear, he had been doing some stuff before he was Kane Justice. But,
yeah, okay.
But I can take the Kane Justice as a rookie for sure.
Yeah, I can buy it. So we're going to push that narrative.
Yes.
Versus the Broken Arrow, or what was he?
Atlanta's Arrow.
Atlanta's Arrow, Chip Day. I like how these guys are having a Twitter war, a little Twitter beef.
Yes.
They'll keeping the juices alive for a future match. Like how Chip calls. I mean, I like how Chip refers to Justice as kid. But man, what did you think of the match?
I loved the match. The start was really good with them kind of doing the technical stuff. Pretty quickly, I think Kane is like, ah, fuck this. I'm going to do some underhanded, you know, kind of taking the powder, drawing him out. The strike interactions were really good and definitely put a nice way to compare these two and put them on kind of an evil footing for both technical and striking. I think that a lot of people would expect Chip to be the premier striker out of the two, but I think Kane held his own and showed that he could keep up with the strike. And then them going to a draw made sense for me. I liked it. Keep both guys pretty much protected. It's kind of it feels like one of those situations where you just kind of hate that the luck of the draw took two guys who could have been favorites to win the whole thing, took them out because they just happened to face each other in the first round, and now nobody else has to deal with them, which is kind of a cool little storytelling device. And I love Kane post-match when Chip is saying, hey, come on, let's do this 5 more minutes, and Kane's like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that if the tournament's off. Like, I'm not... This isn't worth it to me just to prove that I can beat you up some more. And he just takes off. And I thought that was perfect for his character. Perfect storytelling, like I said, for the tournament. And really just great stuff. And you talk about good booking. You go from maybe being a little disappointed in Cam Carter because you were excited to see what he could do to some booking that really shows why CWF is the best booked company going right now.
But Kane didn't just walk away. He did a sucker attack Chip afterwards. And Day made the comeback to chase his ass off.
Yes.
Which is great healing and great, make your crowd happy, because I guess they don't have plans for him right this moment. If they had plans coming up to build to the next show, then Kane would have laid him out. Here, Babyface still looks tall, standing tall, and so they can fight another day type of thing. So I really like the end booking. Did you have a star rating for the match?
No, not particularly. I don't always star rate the CWF matches, but if I was
I thought 10 minutes was deserving of one, but that's fine. I gave it 3.5 stars.
Yeah, which is what I was going to say, actually, too.
Okay. Sorry for cutting you off.
No, it's cool.
I was really looking forward to this. I'm like, ooh, Justice and Chip Day. This could be interesting. I love Day teasing the teaser destroying Kane's arm. Big knee in the middle by Day, which I really liked. Love Kane hooks on Chip's arm into the Kimura, right? And Kane's biting the arm. I love that. Day, of course, he's known for it. He brings the strikes. And then Kane does a curveball and goes after the leg. I mean, I've been a big proponent of this. When Kane is fighting guys who are big, I think he should work the leg a little bit more. I think it adds a different wrinkle to his character than just going for the twist ending all the time. Even though I think it's great in psychology of building matches around the twist ending. Sometimes, you know, you have your wrestling guy, and I think Chip has probably about 4 inches on him. You think that's an exaggeration?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I thought that it was a good game plan coming into it, so it made sense to me, especially on top of that, too, he's known for the kicks. He's Jagger, so take out his weapons.
Yep, exactly. So I enjoyed the whole entire psychology there. I thought Chip sold the leg really well. And I thought Chip really did a great job putting over Kane's offense. And Kane teases like he wants more time, and it looks like they're going away. But Day looks away and got no good rat bastard Kane Justice. I love the fact his last name is Justice. and goes to sneak attacks him, and Day makes a great comeback, chases the rat bastard off. And we'll hopefully get some more of these guys, because they're definitely going after it on Twitter. Then we get it. Johnny P's video, which is a preview for the Boys of Gibsonville. I absolutely thought this thing was amazing. I thought this was an incredible package. I thought what Johnny did here, I'll be candid. Johnny and I are really good friends. But you know what? I've critiqued his work before where I didn't like the music choice in the Kane video. But here, I honestly thought this might be better than his work that he did on Barbed Wire City. And that's a high bar, because Barbed Wire City kicked ass. And this thing looked amazing. And if they were selling the DVD of the Boys of Gibsonville at this moment at my DVD store, I would have hotwired a car and drove down to Best Buy or Blockbuster, if Blockbuster is still in business, and got one. I thought this preview I can't wait to see more of it. I thought this thing was brilliant and just shows how, I mean, that shows how creative and what a, I can't put it over enough. I mean, Johnny P's video fucking rocked. I'm glad CWF, you guys haven't seen this, it's up on the CWF YouTube channel separately, so you don't even have to watch the whole channel. Go watch this damn video package. It's fucking nuts how fucking awesome it is. I mean, it looks like something the WWE put out, and the WWE, some people say, oh, that's a mean thing to say. WWE does incredible video packages. That's what they're known for. Their video packages a lot of times are better than their matches. Check this video package out. This thing is fucking incredible. What'd you take, Timothy?
Yeah, I mean, I like Nick Richards, but I've really, unfortunately, seen him as the one that, especially if you're comparing him to Trevor Lee, in my head, I'm like, he's the one who's going to be in CWF. Trevor Lee's the one who's going to make a bigger name for himself, all this and that. But this video brings in the backstory, brings in the emotion, brings in the feeling of that, and was telling that story so well, and then kind of tying in their friendship. I'm like, wow, like, the fact that you had to do the digging to put this together and figure out the backstories that make that kind of slight comparison that you may have thought, but then showing how much more depth and kind of emotion and drama there is to that. I'm with you. I'm super excited to see more of this story. I'm super excited to see where this goes, and the video editing and everything, the way it was done was, like, just perfect. I loved it. I really did.
And the best part is, I mean, because you don't have to spend 30 minutes on a video here. This thing maybe was 3 to 7 minutes. Like, I don't know the runtime, but it kind of ran. That's the thing, which was so amazing. It was such a short video package. It caught so many emotions, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking incredible, Johnny P. Props. Then we get Royal Wilkins with Chet Sterling, man. What'd you make of this?
The match itself, the first match, I guess, I was really into. I liked Chet Sterling from underneath. I liked Wilkins kind of using the cheating that he can, trying to essentially, like, wear him down like he always does. I thought the finish was phenomenal. Wilkins continuously looking for that submission hold over and over again, then gets kind of rolled up into the small package. Feels similar to the story they were telling last year with Nick Richards winning with the small packages and proving that he could wrestle, and that was the whole point. I think he won a lot of matches with the Weaver roll, which they're making a big deal out of, so I kind of really enjoyed that. And yeah, I mean, this was pretty quick, but I thought that they did a really good job of making the kind of telling the story that was then going to lead into an even bigger story after the match.
I totally agree. Yeah, it was kind of like Johnny P's video was a tease. This match felt like a tease because I want more, you know? I think these guys could have a great match given the time. I loved Sterling throws this beautiful arm drag in the match. Of course, every time I see that golf swing, I pop, and here it sets up Wilkins' heat. It's a fun bout, you know, but you want more because you know these guys can give it to you. Then Eric Royal, he attacks, and they're beating the shit up out of Sterling. And who makes the save, Timothy?
The Hurricane. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, I popped, all right? I'm not even a Hurricane Mark, but I popped because it fucking was cool. That's how you should use, like, special attractions or where they come save the day, but you're still getting the other talent over. And here again, I'm going to use the term I coin it, the umbrella storytelling. And here we have it. The umbrella has opened up and it has Royal Wilkins, Chet Sterling, Eric Royal, and now the Hurricane to go with Coach Gemini is all being touched on in this umbrella. And I enjoyed this. The Hurricane making the save left me with this gigantic smile on my face. Eric Royal telling Helms he's a liar when saying the fans are the most loyal. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Helms cuts this promo and saying how the fans are the most, CWF fans are the most loyal fans. And Royal's like, you're a liar. The fans are not the most loyal. I absolutely loved it. Popping. Absolutely popping. And then we get the match, man. The Hurricane. Chet Sterling versus Eric Royal, the ace, and Royal Wilkins, man. What'd you make of this?
Oh, I loved this. I mean, it was sticky stuff, but it was fantastic. The The All-Stars are just this amazing kind of two-man wrecking crew. When they get on the Heat, they're just working over Chet, who's selling his ass off to get that big tag out. I love Hurricane. It's just, he's got that air of the elder statesman. I can't believe how well he's able to play so many different roles, having been someone who really watched him, I mean, from early on, to watch how he's developed this character that's so different from where he started, but, I mean, also he's, like, grown and grown with it, and being, you know, he was always a small guy in WCW, WWE, and now he's kind of a bigger guy on the indie scene, size-wise, so, but then it's still tongue-in-cheek. It's real funny when he's trying to do the double choke slam on the All-Stars. It's just so crazy, and the way he stands up to them and stands up to, you know, them cheating, he wants to stop it, and then when Chet does get the big hot tag to him, he's just a ball of fire, house of fire, I guess, and he's all over the place, and a bunch of just cool big moves and stuff. It's like, he's such a great mix of old school and new school and knows exactly how to play to the crowd. It's just, it's really impressive for a guy who, another one who self-trained, you know, just learned in the backyards with the Hardy Boys and never really got officially trained anymore, just how well he understands the business and how well he's able to still work even to this day. It is pretty impressive. I mean, I'm not like some big time Hurricane fanboy, but the guy does know how to work, and
he had that huge accident too, right? That car accident.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
I think it was a motorcycle accident.
Motorcycle. Okay. Oh yeah. All right. That'll work.
Yeah.
I liked it. I gave it 2.5 stars. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it, but I enjoyed the hell out of it. I love the stack up comedy spot, and the commentary put it over big, you know, no pun intended. The All-Stars getting heat on Sterling. It was exactly what it needed to be. They did run a Southern tag, and, they kept our Sterling to get the heat and Hurricane getting the hot tag. Overall, fun stuff, man. No complaints from me here. Another really fun CWF, you know?
Yep, that's for sure. And this is how, like you said, this is how you do it, man. Ending off at the Hurricane, that's a fun show.
Exactly. And that leads us into the second night of CWF. And we take a little breather from the Weaver Cup. And we open up with Snooty Fox versus Dirty Daddy and versus the Dawsons. I really like the fact that they're using Snooty and Dirty Daddy, because you said, where do you see Dirty Daddy going? This was probably last year at some point. And you're like, I see him and Snooty Fox as a tag team. And you know what? I'm really liking this tag team. I really like him as a babyface tag team. I thought I enjoyed the faces on the arm early on. I thought it was a fun shine. I thought Daddy's big bump sets up the heat. I loved how the heels don't switch. Or the ref, the heels switch in and out without the ref. I'm a big fan of that heel spot. And then Daddy almost kills himself on the dive. I mean, that was a miracle. But overall, super fun tag, man. What would you make of it?
Agreed. The SoTime have become such a great babyface shine tag team, like you talked about in the opening segment, with the arm work was just really, really dynamic and fun. Dawson's obviously just trademark heels, real heels, the kind of guys you hate. And you just kind of love how much you get to hate them with the shitty way that they work the heat. Then you play off of Snooty's kind of young exuberance, maybe not really thinking things through. Tags Dirty Daddy back in too quickly after he had just been worked over. They're able to, you know, equalize, get rid of Snooty Fox for a little bit, and then finish off Daddy all by himself with a nice double team. This is how tag wrestling works.
Yep.
Nobody stood out. Honestly, nobody really felt like they were the biggest part of the match or the star of the match, but everybody looked great, and it made the match better overall to have that narrative structure that built throughout.
Yep. What'd you make of Eric Andrews' promo?
The Eric Andrews promo that gets interrupted by Trevor Lee, I thought was fantastic. Really enjoyed Eric Andrews here. I thought he came across, I mean, perfect. I mean, the thing about Andrews' promos and Andrews' character work is it's so real. It's really hard to give him a bunch of credit because I don't know, you know, I can't believe that he's like that outside of the ring, but it just comes across so, I just believe that that's who he is. It's just too good for me to even, like, break down and praise. It's just, it seems like a real guy talking about his real life, and I just, it's really well done.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Andrews comes across like the greatest TV title slash meth dealer on the planet. I mean, that's when I look at him. But I mean, this promo here was really good. I like Trevor coming out, kind of like a almost kind of cocky, little arrogant, you know?
Yeah.
We saw a little bit in the boys of Gibsonville video. We coming off the match and earlier. We see Trevor, and you know, the fans wanted Nick Richards to win. That's what it felt like to me. Like they were behind him. And now I'm kind of liking seeing Trevor come across a little cocky, like maybe fans don't deserve me, you know? I mean, he didn't say that, but I can see this slow morphing. And, I know these guys are good at, laying groundwork. They're good at laying the laying that foundation. And I can see this happening. And, I thought the Andrews Lee interaction was a really nice piece of business, man. And that leads us to Priscilla Kelly versus Sis. And all I can say is I love this match. I love the aggression from both girls. It had both of them felt like they hated the fuck out of each other. Fun little hate-filled brawl, I guess, or fight, or it was almost like a a cat fight in the aggression, but more technical. You know, I don't want to cheapen it by calling it a cat fight, but it had that type of like Sunshine and Precious type feel to it from World Class, where you know these two didn't like each other, they slapped the shit out of each other, they rolled around. But here it was more technical. But damn, Priscilla Kelly looked like she's improved like leaps and bounds just by watching this match. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. It felt personal. It felt like a grudge match. It also felt like Priscilla Kelly was here to prove just what you said, that she's not the same girl that Sis beat just a few weeks back. And she really showed it off here. She stood toe-to-toe with the bigger girl. Nasty German suplex that she just takes, and then I like that she takes the German suplex. She kind of no-sells it, but she also doesn't go right into more aggressive action. She just grabs a hold and pulls her to the mat and is able to tap her out off of that. So I like that. It shows that the move definitely did damage her, but she's got that wherewithal and that heart, and now she's got the will of a warrior. So I think they did a really good job telling the story here.
Yeah, and I felt this match, they worked this match much better than they did the previous one. It was night and day almost.
Yeah.
Almost like they, it was that damn good. All right, man, main event, Lee Andrews. Tell us about it, brother.
Oh, geez. I adored this match. Like you talked about Trevor seeming a little cocky, a little too confident. That's what I thought. He felt a little too comfortable. He comes out in his Hawaiian shirt and his gym shorts, acting like he's going to wrestle just wearing that. And then here, he's out with his gear, and he's all fired up and ready to go in the ring. He knows who he is. He's the man in CWF. But Eric Royal he's powdering. He's dodging. He's cutting off Trevor. As soon as Trevor thinks he gets any momentum going, Eric Royal's out of the ring. And he's pacing around, and it's just starting to frustrate Trevor. Gets to the point where, you know, I actually am starting to think, like, oh, my God, like, Eric Andrews might be the one who's able to put this together, because so many other guys, when they're trying to beat Trevor, they're looking for a way to beat him fair, to beat him heads up, to prove that they're better, and maybe Eric Andrews has the answer here, which is to use some of that cunning that he uses to win those TV title matches. He's big, he's got his power, he's got his size, but he definitely also has the smarts and the game plan, and it's amazing here as he starts working over Trevor's knee. Long heat on the knee that just looks like it's killing Trevor, and then the build. And we're going to talk about a lot of G1. A lot of this G1, it just seems like they go from one thing to another, back and forth the whole time. This, the build up to Trevor getting his comeback feels really makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of progression. It's like actual storytelling in the building to the comeback. Trevor Selling is amazing. The guy is just one of the best sellers on the planet. Eric Andrews gets a knee trembler and then decides to go to grab both belts when he gets the kick out there. And this pisses Trevor off so much that he just fires up, takes him down, gets the win with the STF, and it's over. And I thought, yeah, like that was a really, really good story. I really believe you talked about Andrew or Eric Andrews and Trevor being so good and their levels and all this. I really think that they did a great job of making you buy into Eric Andrews possibly pulling this off. I thought, that, like I said, the selling, the storytelling, the way they built back and forth, and then the finishing kind of moments with Trevor, just he's had enough of being disrespected, and the final major disrespect, this guy decides to go and grab his title belt and thinks he's going to use it to beat him with his own belt, and he puts him down. And I give this 4.5 stars. I really loved this match.
I'm with you. I went 4. I liked it a lot. I really liked Andrews on the bike to start, and I like how, you know, everyone's like, I really enjoyed him stalling. Then we get a little bit of grappling, and then Andrews is back on the bike. I liked Andrews, like, Zabiscoing Lee so much that it led to a small package by Andrews, which all because it frustrated Lee. And then we have Andrews with that forward chop lock. Loved it. And now Andrews is on the leg, and he's just working the leg and just basic stuff, wrestling 101. I liked Andrews punching the fucking leg. Lee pulling down the knee pad is a nice touch by putting it over. The commentary really planting the seed that Lee could lose because of how much traveling he's doing. Lee's selling of the leg is really great. Andrews cutting them off, going after the leg. Andrews' legwork is basic, but nasty. Love Lee anticipating the chop block and hits a big German suplex. Now Lee's like, okay, let's take it to the bank. Let's go after the arm. And he's going after the arm. Love Lee's sell of the leg after the stomp. Freaking great. Andrew with the tights roll up. I popped. I thought he had won the title on that one. The submission with the heel hook and STF counter. I love that spot. Low blow to Lee, and you thought he might have another. Andrews might pull it off again, but he doesn't. And Lee finally hooks it on. Freaking fantastic. I mean, it might be a little long, but I really liked that, you know, Lee comes in as cocky, a little cocky, like he's above wrestling Eric Andrews. Then Andrews just doesn't do the normal thing, which is he didn't take it to Lee. He waited and stalled, and it felt like what Larry Zbyszko would do in the stalling out, and that's what Andrews did. And then Lee was able to walk right into his trap. You know, he was like a master game master, and then pulled out the rug from under Lee and dominated that match. And Lee's cockiness got to him where it almost cost him the match. And I'm really kind of curious on where Lee and the cockiness can go forward. And you know what? They can go back. Because like Dick Murdoch and Butch Reed used to have these feuds over the UWF champion or the Mid-South champ. I know. I think Murdoch was the TV champ and Reed was the Mid-South champs, or vice versa. But like the TV title will be up for the first 10 minutes. And we might see that happening now where Trevor goes, I can beat you in 10 minutes. I can take your title. And you have that, all that aspect of this. And then he goes, and then the first 10 minutes, the TV title is on the line. But then after the 10 minutes, the other title is on the line. Makes it more interesting, and I can see that. I think they could easily come back and do that type of match, don't you think?
Yeah, I actually really like the idea of that that stipulation. That's
it's totally cool. And it changes the whole entire psychology of the match, because then Lee is pushing, trying to win, and Andrews is, you know, trying to avoid, and then when it becomes the other way, then it becomes now the champ might have just blown his load by going pushing the pace so quickly that now Andrews can try to nitpick and go after the champ because he's you know, kind of shot his watch. So there's so many storytelling and psychology they can do, and I really hope we get to see that going forward, because I love this match, and Andrews showed, man, that he's more than just a fucking 10-minute wrestling champion, man. I this is fantastic stuff, man. And I mean, Charlie, oops, you know, it takes two to tango. Don't get me wrong. Andrews was with him every step of the way, but man, Charlie, it was like, oops, he did it again. You know, it's just best damn. Best world title run ever. Not ever, but in a long ass fucking time. Just incredible. Well, I mean, anything else you need to say?
No, I mean, I'm there with you. One of the best ever right now, especially in when it comes to, you know, title runs.
And another just Grand Slam episodic television. It's like, you know, it's kind of like right now the network has just dumped a shitload of WCCW World Class on the on it. And what they did back in the day was like one of the only territories that would the Sportatorium, they'd record their Sportatorium shows, which are big shows, and show them on TV. And that's kind of exactly what CWF does here. It's the television show is their arena shows, you know, and they make it, it makes it different. Back in the territory days, it was hard pressed to find super competitive matches weekly, and World Class delivered that. And so it has that, CWF has that in a vibe. I mean, they're totally different book promotions, but they have that that tool in place that they do, which is a nice little callback and throwback. But man, what a great hour of television this was, huh?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Man, with that said, why don't we go to NXT and then go into the break, or do you want to go to break now?
Let's go to NXT first.
All right, sounds good. And let's see, so we open up with Gargano, and he introduces his new theme. I didn't like how he had his old theme, and he comes on stage and points to the Tron, and he has his new theme. I'm not a big fan of that. I thought that was cheesy. And then he wrestles Paul Mendoza, and I thought Mendoza got over pretty good. I think Mendoza potatoed him a couple times. I still thought it was a super fun match. Still not sure Gargano needed to do a 50-50 match. Because, you know, he's going into a hot feud, supposedly with Ciampa or somebody. He's a freshly new, minted baby face. So it felt like, I mean, I know his character is not to eat up people, but it just felt a little odd for a guy who they're going to get a good, give him a good push to go 50-50 with Mendoza. But I thought the match was good. What'd you make of all of that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, even though I think part of it is that they wanted to help Mendoza, I think it really bastardizes your tag team titles when a guy that was so dominant in the tag division is then shown that he's not as good as I think he probably should be pushed in the singles division. Here, essentially going 50-50 with Mendoza, who, you know, the only thing we've seen of him is he couldn't get out of the first round of the Cruiserweight Classic last year. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that they should have, if they don't want to use Mendoza this way, then, or, you know, they don't want to use him to put somebody over, then they should have put somebody in here who they were okay with just being there just to put over Gargano.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get this Ellering Authors of Pain promo, which I just thought, eh, it was okay. What about you?
I'm with you. I'm whatever. It's fine, yeah. I guess.
Yep. Then we get Asuka promo, and, you know, Ember Moon comes out, and she cuts a promo. The fake handshake part I thought was fantastic. I thought that was great. Thought it was a fun piece of business with fight and with the fight and Ember's finisher. What about you?
Yeah, I liked the physicality. I think that Asuka is still not quite there, and I think that like character-wise, I think she does a pretty good job, but she's still missing something to be a real heel in America.
Yeah.
I think she doesn't quite get it on how to get heat, and that's not to say that she's not, you know, good at her character work or any of that, but I just think she may be a better heel in Japan than she is in America right now.
Yeah, agreed. Then we get Robbie Roode interview. I really love him as the world champ. And he's playing up the strong match. Love the lottery analogy, playing the Roode lottery. I absolutely playing the Bobby Roode lottery. Loved it. Then Strong gets the set. Regal's out. You know, you're thinking maybe are they doing a three-way? Are they building to Strong and Drew? Or what? You know, I think there's, again, they're muddling the waters on this feud. I'll tell you that much. What'd you make of everything?
Yeah, and the Bobby Roode lottery thing I think is great because it feels so old school that it was like someone gave him a little idea for the promo because you got to just, you know, keep it fresh and mix it up. So it's, here's this random idea, talk about the lottery. And so he comes up with something randomly and it's the Bobby Roode lottery. And I kind of love that because it reminds me of some real old school promo style. So I like that. The feud itself, as you said, mixing in Roddy, I understand because we talked about it. You don't want him to just disappear into nothing after that title win because the feud was going so well. But I don't know. This is muddling Drew McIntyre's feud in his time. So hopefully my kind of the way I see it going plays out because otherwise it's I'm not sure what they're going for here.
Yep. And then we get some more Street Profits. Are you looking forward to them?
I mean, yes and no. At this point, no, not really. But then later on, when they actually do debut, I kind of got a good feeling for them.
Hopefully, as long as they debut soon, which was the next episode we review, maybe we'll stop getting those vignettes for a while. We'll see. Then we get Sonya Deville versus Jenna Von Bammel, whatever.
Yeah,
What'd you make of this?
I liked Bamel again. I think that sometimes, like a lot of times now, this Sonya, I'm liking her opponents more than her. Deville, again, they're just trying to show off her store or like her whole thing. But now with them actually having Shayna under contract, it's making her less and less relevant, honestly.
Yeah. Yep. And then we get into Tommy interview. Where do you go with this thing?
He's doing good. I think he does a pretty good job for playing the character, and you kind of buy into him as an asshole. I'm still waiting to see the real kind of Noah Kenta to show up, or even the early ROH Kenta to show up in NXT. But I like his promos. I think other people aren't necessarily into it because, you know, the accent or whatever, hard to speak English. But I buy into it. And then Aleister Black coming out and standing face to face with him. And then having Hideo essentially just act like he's going to hightail it just to get his head kicked off, I thought was very, very interesting and maybe even telling about who's the more important guy that they see moving forward out of this.
Yeah, and then I'm with you. And it kind of like, you know, they got rid of, it felt like they were building to a Tommy hero. And it looks like they pushed that to the side. And now they're making it Black and a Tommy. I just felt it was a little weird. I felt it was like kind of like I don't want to say switching bait because that's not the case, but it felt like they're in one direction and then they fucking do a 360.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Kyle O'Reilly, Aleister Black. Fuck. Tell me about it, Tim.
God damn. These guys were looking just amazing here together against each other. It really felt like Kyle was, you know, oh, I'm going to show this guy what for on the mat. And, of course, he can't because Aleister Black is a good wrestler. He's not just a kickboxer. He can also wrestle. So they're grappling back and forth. And it breaks down into some striking and forearms. And these guys, I mean, that is what they're all about. I mean, good God, the just kind of back and forth, nasty-looking strikes. Each guy holding their own the whole way through. I love Kyle's looking for arm bars, looking for leg submissions, different holds, like even locking in some chokes here and there, which I think, it shows like Kyle, he's so well-rounded that he doesn't stay focused enough, and sometimes I think that that's what ends up being what catches him, because I felt like Black was a lot more focused the whole way through, really staying on him the whole time. But yeah, I thought these guys are so fucking good together. This felt like a big time epic matchup, and definitely one I think that, God, I mean, I hope they bring this back on a takeover, or maybe build to a big feud between these two, because even with, you know, a pretty decisive finish on here, there's still a lot more story I think you could tell between these two.
Fuck yeah, and we got two commercial breaks in this fucking thing. It was still an awesome match. I got it was like 4 stars. It was fucking hard hitting, fucking super technical. It was even in a loss, it was a great debut for Kyle, you know? It made him a player. Like, this guy belongs on top. It's almost like they have too much talent now on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. I think that they probably time to have a superstar shakeup.
Yep, might as well. I can't imagine McIntyre being down on the roster. I mean, that guy screams superstar.
Yeah, I know. He's got it, and he's been working on TV the whole time. It's one thing when guys take time off from WWE and then they're just gone. But McIntyre's been working on TV the whole time. I mean, he's ready to just be put back on TV.
Yeah, put him over. Vince, admit you fucked up. He's a better... I enjoy what they're doing with Jinder. But, I mean, McIntyre is a total blue chipper. And God... And it'd be another fresh baby face or heel, whatever they want to do on the roster. And yeah, he deserves better than what's going on right now. Then we go to the next NXT episode. Boom, boom, boom. And we open up with Sanity attacking the Authors of Pain. Eric Young returns. I thought we needed a beatdown for the Authors of Pain. They've been too damn dominant. So, good. What about you?
Yeah, I said it a couple of weeks back when Damo, or what's his name, Dane, was pissed off, but Wolf looked like he was laughing, and he had a plan, and here it was. They have a plan. They use their numbers advantage. They set a trap. The whole thing, I think that this was perfect for the Sanity group. This was perfect for, as you said, to finally... maybe show a little bit, have someone get something on the Authors of Pain just to show that they're not invincible monsters. So, yeah, I really like this.
And then what we get? We get another goddamn, sorry, using the goddamn word again, twice. But we get another freaking Street Profits vignette. I don't need any more vignettes. Let's bring them on, huh?
Yeah, and luckily, I mean, they pretty much show up right after this. But
exactly. But then we get a Mean Girls vignette. They can do these. These girls can do them all the time. Every time they do them, I love them.
Yeah, they're so good as characters. I almost want to have them have like a Piper's Pit. You know?
Yeah,
I mean? That would be like
something.
Perfect for them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, because I'd rather see them do that because they're kind of rubbery. Like they're almost like too skinny to be wrestlers in a way. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Pull them out of the ring. Make them managers, you know? Give them heat like that, because they can get heat. I just don't think they're good wrestlers, but I think they'd be good managers. I think they could be like a Sherry Martel, who was a hell of a great manager, and it'd be something different. But then again, Vince doesn't use managers, so, I mean, that'd be kind of a dead end. So, I don't know. I just don't think they have the package as wrestlers, but I love these vignettes, and they're entertaining. And then we get the Street Profits wrestling the Metro Bros. What you make of this?
So here's my thing. I thought that the Street Profits looked good, but not good enough. I'm kind of scared for their style and their whole act because it's just more excuse for more Ronaldo to act like an idiot and make a bunch of references to pop culture stuff.
Time out real quick, which I thought was funny. You're burying him, and I forgot to bring up how I thought how awesome him and Nigel were in the Kyle O'Reilly, Aleister Black match.
Yeah.
I mean, which is funny because you know I'm with you. Mauro can be a pain in the ass at times, but when he's on point, man, the guy's damn good.
Yeah, I honestly think he's one of the best. I really like his style. He has a gravitas and an air to his voice that sounds like legit sports that he lends to the product. But yeah, when he's you know, when he takes the time to reference the different, like, raps, like, rap songs and stuff like that, it can be a little cringy, but...
I want to hear him call freaking Timothy Thatcher, Max, I'll tell you that.
God damn, that would be nice. But yeah, I thought that it was a fine squash here. The Profits show off some athleticism, but here's what I got from this, and I really kind of hope that maybe somehow someone can kind of get this idea as well and push for it, but I think that the Street Profits, with them talking about their collegiate backgrounds and their kind of fun-loving party attitude, that they could be really like a modern version of the Steiner Brothers. And that's what I would have loved to have seen for their squash matches here, is a lot more aggression and a lot more violence. I thought that they looked good and they looked athletic, but I want to see some real hard-hitting, taking some jobbers' heads off type matches from these guys, because in some ways, they really are. I mean, people said it for the American Alpha because of the whole grappling, you know, background and wrestling stuff, but I really think these guys could fit that style a little bit better.
Okay, I don't see it yet, but we'll see. Then we get Regal, and we get a face-to-face with McIntyre and Rude. I thought Rude's interview was very strong. McIntyre's was solid. Then Roddy Strong comes out. You know, he's like the odd man out, but he's still gonna make. He's gonna be out there. And what do we get? We get this build to Strong versus Drew for next week. I don't think this helps anybody, really. If you beat Strong, then, I mean, or vice versa. I mean, again, it just muddles up everything. What would you make of it?
I think the match is too much, but I thought that the promo, the angle here was perfect. I think everybody played their character to a T in the angle.
Yeah, I mean, you have Bobby Roode's Ric Flair.
Right.
You have Drew McIntyre as Kerry Von Erich, and you have Roddy Steamboat. I mean, it's Triple H is playing his fantasy booking from 1987 or 6, where all three guys are in three different promotions.
Right. Now I'm trying to think of who Regal was playing here as the commissioner who doesn't want to he doesn't want to book this unfair matchup. Like, he doesn't want, but he can't stop it when the kind of foolhardy babyface was allowed to let himself be pushed into it by the heel, which I think was one of the parts that I really loved about this, is Bobby Roode is playing this heel who's like, yeah, why don't you guys fight each other? Why don't, you're a real fighter, right, McIntyre? You're not scared, and it wouldn't make sense for me to defend my title again, but
yeah.
It would make sense for you guys to fight each other. I was just like dying. I was like, this is so perfect, and yeah, Rude is just, I just still deserve my shot. You're talking about my family. It's not even about the shot at this point. It's about my family and what you've disrespected. And again, McIntyre's the foolhardy, I'm going to fight anybody who wants to fight guy. And yeah, like I said, I just thought it was done so perfectly. Everyone made sense in their roles. The match, like you said, maybe we'll kind of muddle things. Who gets what? Who gets hurt? What do you really build coming out of it? But the angle, I thought, was perfect.
Fair enough. What'd you make of the Gargano interview?
I don't really like Gargano. I mean, I didn't see anything here. I'm not into it, honestly.
Yeah, singles Gargano is bland. Bland as hell. Then we got Orny Lorcan versus Danny Burch. Oh, man, what'd you make of this?
Felt like a toned-down version of their last match.
Yeah.
Really felt forced. I felt like their last match really was enough. And then it feels like, oh, let's try to make this into something, so let's have another match so that it can, you know, we can have it be one-on-one and set up a rubber match and all that. So, yeah, it was good. Don't get me wrong. These guys are great, and their action is hard-hitting and nice, but it felt like you didn't need to have this match, honestly.
And you did see where Burch ended up working this weekend.
No, I did not see.
He did not work again. Originally, he was booked for Scenic City. He was going to work FIP. And ends up, or I mean, he's going to work Style Battle, ends up on a house show in the NXT loop. So, you know, Gabe, you get what you fucking deserve, you fucking rat bastard. And, you know, I mean, I'm assuming, we talked about this weeks ago when they actually gave him that vignette, gave him a video package. Burch has got to be signing pretty soon, don't you think?
I would assume he has a UK contract.
Yeah.
Because he was in the tournament.
Right, you see last time. But, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, he won. I mean, guys that are not under contract, they don't fucking let win.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure he's got some kind of contract. And hey, I mean, it sucks for everybody involved, but it might have been that, you know, WWE is more interested in him now. And because they have a contract, they have the rights to pull him from whatever date they want. So,
right. Hey. Yeah, it's what happens, you know. Well, watch out, Progress with Dunn and all those guys.
Yep.
You never fucking know what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm with you. Good, solid match. Surprised. I wasn't surprised because, I mean, they're building a rivalry. And if one guy wins all the time, then it's not a rivalry. I kind of liked the tease of the handshake bullshit at the end, though.
Yeah, I liked it.
So you know we're going to get in round three eventually. Cien Almas, No Way Jose. Selena Vega has a presence to her. I liked her. I liked the Vegas promo and the setup to Almas versus Gargano. But I feel like this is all it is. Cien Almas is just losing again. I don't see how this helps his character at all. I thought he was going to the main roster. Obviously not. I thought they fucked up his push. I like Vega, but there's no way they're putting Gargano over unless they have Ciampa interfere just to beat, you know, to put heat that way. I don't know. I just feel like this is you're giving him a new toy, but you're not letting him really play with it, you know?
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I think this match was kind of just put in here just to kind of try to get some kind of heat back on Almas. You're trying to show that he's new and improved because he's got Vega on his side who's keeping him focused, and now he's a contender. But if he just, after this, if all they do is have him, all this was to try to build him up for Johnny, then I don't think that you have too many more times you can try to pull this before people just give up on him completely. And the worst casualty to me of the whole thing is No Way Jose here, because why is he being put in this position? I mean, I understand the fans like him, and he can dance and stuff, but like that doesn't mean that he has to just be a goofy character guy that you use to put other guys over.
I heard they called the finish on the fly that he got heat for dancing with Papa Hales.
Oh no!
No, just kidding. but I'm with you. With all the heat with fucking Enzo and Cass, and they broke them up. Man, the times bring Swan and No Way Jose is that fun-loving tag team up to the roster. It felt like both guys kind of lost their footing after that tag team, which got over huge.
Yeah, I agree.
With no reason to get over huge, but they got over huge, and they didn't realize what they had. They had lightning in a bottle. I'm not saying that these guys are going to light the damn world on fire, but I think they'd be a great addition as an opening tag team who you could push to the top in the tag division and get over. And because both guys, I think both guys need a little something. Like, I think Swan could use Jose's charisma, and I think Jose could use Swan's work. And combine them together, they're a little bit of peanut butter and jelly. I mean, that's what tag teams were all about back in the day. They'd take the highlight the good of one guy and highlight the good of the other guy and let them cover each other's weaknesses, you know. And I thought No Way Jose and Rich Swan did that well, but obviously not well enough because they broke them up and now they've both been in purgatory pretty much ever since.
Yeah, I mean, the sad part is that probably no one really thought of it who saw it, and then
Yeah. Nobody
who would have the vision to see that it needs to be that it could be used in a bigger setting probably even saw it. So that's kind of the issue there.
Yeah, I always thought it was like you didn't need them because you had Enzo and Cass, but, you know, with all that shit storm of that thing's brewing, might as well. But, hey, yeah, I don't even think it's not even on the radar. So, Pete, drop it and don't get your hopes up. On that note, why don't we take a break, and we're going to finish up some G1 stuff.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're talking G1. We're starting. We're at night number 9. Oh my god. And we got Maccabe versus Nagata. Yeah, solid, good match. Gave it 3 stars. What about you?
3.25, right there with you. It's fine.
There we go. And then we got Fale versus Ibushi. What'd you make of this one?
3.5. I really liked Fale on top as a monster. I thought Ibushi did a good job playing underdog babyface and really made Fale look good here. Fale actually looked good the whole tournament. But yeah, I like this match.
Yeah, I went 4 stars. I thought it was Fale's best match. It was fun seeing him work holds, like working the leg, but using his weight. Thought Ibushi sold the leg real well. I thought Ibushi with that fucking moonsault from the rafters was nuts, though. And Ibushi did stuff to make Fale's size look great, like that big 360 bump. And then we got Goto and Zack Sabre Jr. Gave it a 3.75, liked it. Zack working the leg, and then incorporates the arm, like Goto using suplexes and strikes at the counter, Zack. But you know what? I love Zack just going with so many damn submissions attempts. Really good stuff. What about you?
Yeah, 3.25 also. It's pretty much there with you. I love Zack riding around on Goto like he's some kind of jungle gym, looking for different arm bars and chokes and stuff. I thought that was great.
What about Tanahashi and Yoshihashi?
Give it 3 stars. I think that they did a pretty good job with the crowd here. They're really into Tanahashi. But by the end, I think that they were somewhat into Yoshihashi. At least the crowd was more into him than I was. And, I didn't definitely thought it was a very good match, but, nothing insanely great.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. 3 stars. Then we got Naito and Ishii, and I really liked this. I gave it 4.25. I thought Naito's bump off of Ishii's forearm looked freaking damn good, dangerous. Both guys... back or worse from the neck. Love Naito's head scissor. Very Kevin Von Erich-esque. Naito tapping the neck. Ishii with the bruiser's offense, with the bruising offense. Naito has been great so far here and feels like a main event type match. I really enjoyed the intensity here. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it 3.25. I think not as good as their last match against each other, but there was some stuff that I really enjoyed. Naito locking in the chin lock that could be seen as kind of just like a rest spot, but he's throwing intermittent elbows to the top of the head during it that I love, and he's cutting Ishii off every time he gets going and taking him down to the mat so that he can't get any kind of locomotion going, which is really Ishii's game plan. So I really enjoyed it quite a bit as well.
Yeah. Night 10, Evil versus Yano. What do you think of this?
Quick bullshit match with Yano getting pinned after he gets hit with a mule kick. I think that the Yano booking throughout the tournament, while at sometimes enraging, at sometimes was good, because I think it would have been really stupid to have messed with Evil's momentum here and not have him just get a pretty clear victory over a comedy goof. I give it 1 star.
Yeah, I give it the check mark.
This match happened.
Yep. I think Yano, I kind of like having Yano on the cards because he's different. And it actually makes the matches go by quicker because, you know, you're only getting a 3-minute match or so. But I think it's also insulting to the G1 in general because you can find somebody. I just feel like that bracket gets an extra day off in a way when you got to work Yano. Right. So it's kind of cheating in a way. And then we got Suzuki versus Tama Tonga, and I actually like this. I like the brawling all around ringside. Had a very chaotic feel. It was very unique to the G1 the way it was. The ref book took some heat from the bout, though, but I still liked it 3 3/4. So what about you?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty solidly in the same camp as you. Liked it quite a bit. I did wonder why they would have kind of Tama Tonga just playing, you know, strong heel against the guy who's very clearly the kind of the evil boss of the entire company. I mean, I think Suzuki's the biggest heel in the company. But I think Tama Tonga's honestly probably like a close second, as weird as that seems, for the most actual heel in the company. Because everybody else in Bullet Club is like tweener, and all of Los Ingobernables is tweener. So he really feels like the second biggest heel, even in the G1, but in the company overall. So I think it was a kind of a good showing for that. But then it is very glaring when you see the two against each other that Suzuki is just worlds better than him. That said, I gave it 3 stars. I did like the action, but like you said, with the ref and some other stuff kind of affected the match for me.
Yeah, I saw it out there. I think I liked it more than probably like anybody else on the internet, unless you're a complete Tonga mark.
I think Kevin Hare from Burning Spirits, which I was just on recently, he was kind of going crazy.
Okay.
Saying that he loved that match.
All right, there we go. It's great minds think alike. Then we got Elgin versus Sonata. What'd you make of this?
I liked this, but I have big issues with Sonata, honestly. I think most of it is his facials. So for me, like in here, he just, I don't know, he comes across really aloof, and then Elgin is like being condescending and even mocking Sonata in the beginning, and I just don't get any emotion back from Sonata out of that. It feels like from there he just goes into spots. I did like Elgin's power moves here, cutting him off and even keeping up with him in speed. I mean, he's using the kind of tricks of the trade, big guy tricks to make himself come across like he's, you know, just as fast when you know that he's not, which I do kind of enjoy, but it does show Elgin as being like a complete threat kind of guy. But all in all, I like the way that Sonata's using the choke, Dragon Sleeper, as to wear down guys to then hit the moonsault, get the pin. I think it's a good way to slowly build him into a babyface, having him get his matches with a high-flying move as his victory, even if he is technically still kind of heel right now. I gave the match 3.5 stars, and like I said, I enjoyed it, but I think there's some hiccups for me psychology-wise with Sonata in every match.
Yeah, I gave it 2 3/4. I just really wasn't feeling it, and it just wasn't my type of match. I just nothing too concise there. And then we got Kojima versus Omega. I like Kojima's payback of Omega messing with Tenzan. Felt like Omega felt like he was trying to slow down the match, or he was trying to work down to Kojima in a way, because he knew Kojima couldn't athletically keep up with him, and it was really glaring and really annoying and obnoxious. With that said, it looked like the finish. I don't know. It just seemed like Kenny turned me off on this match. It felt like he had a dumbed down for Kojima, and I don't think that's the case. I think he just needed to work a much smarter match with Kojima, and it almost felt like Kenny was like offended having to work with him. And it felt really weird to me. I gave it 2 3/4. What about you?
I gave it 2 stars, and I had the same exact feeling as you. But then I kind of thought about it, and I'm like, as you're talking, I'm like, did we both get worked, and was Omega just playing his heel character to the hilt to where it actually made us actually mad at him for being disrespectful to Kojima? Like, was that the point of all this, and was he intentionally doing that, or was it just real? Because, I mean, he came out in his house show gear. He wears a shirt for almost the entire match. He really does seem like he's trying to, like, be dismissive towards Kojima. And then towards the end of the match, he just turns it into the finish of a Young Bucks match, and it's over. So I'm not sure if it was intentional. If it was, he did a good job because he got heat even from me as a Kenny Omega mark. But that said, I thought the match itself, because of it, also suffered, and I gave it 2 stars. So maybe I am just the world's biggest mark, and I fell for Omega's kind of carny working me here, but I don't know.
Well, one, I don't think it was carny. I think it was meta. And,
oh, yeah, this is true.
And I'm not a meta. I'm not a big fan of meta heel work. So if that was the case, then the negative 2 and 3/4, so fuck off. God. Then we got Okada and Juice. What you make of this?
I love this match. I give it 4 1/4. I think that Juice, I cannot believe how well Juice played underdog babyface against even Okada here, which you almost wouldn't expect because Okada is like such a big star to the company. I thought Juice just keeping the pressure on Okada on the floor, going after him hard, then finally getting taken down, having Okada work him over, and the crowd is just like super behind him. Juice selling his knee throughout the entire tournament, but especially here, is amazing.
That's the thing. I felt Okada didn't go after the leg at all in this match, and I was kind of like, I felt like he wanted to stick to his formula, and wouldn't like, and his formula is not working a leg. His formula is working the neck to set up the Rainmaker, and it felt like the whole narrative of Juice was selling his leg the whole damn tournament, and it felt like here Okada didn't even bother to work the leg. I was actually kind of insulted.
I think he didn't focus on it as much as he could have, but I think that Juice still sold it when he could and made it make sense.
Oh no, Juice! Juice sold it. I'm not. My problem is not definitely not with Juice. My problem was with Okada here.
I can definitely see that.
Guy comes in with let's just pretend. I mean, the way he was selling that damn leg throughout the tournament is the equivalent of having a goddamn giant cast on his leg, and Okada doesn't even give us even minimal legwork. I thought was pretty insulting to Juice as a what he did this tournament.
Well, I think that this wasn't,
and I didn't hate the match, mind you. Okay?
Oh yeah, I think this wasn't the worst kind of example of that, but it was definitely glaring throughout the tournament that a lot of people didn't work up to what Juice was giving them. But I think that Okada was there, and I really enjoyed the match. When I say was there, I don't mean he was just there in the match. I mean, he was there in the storytelling, and I actually enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5, and I feel like I told you what my problems were with the match. Night 11, we get Yoshihashi versus Fale. I'm a big mark for tossing people into the chairs, so this worked. And I liked Yoshi's hope spots. 2.5 stars, though. Well, what'd you make of it?
I actually thought I liked it less than you, because I am less of a mark for tossing people into chairs. But I gave it 2 3/4, and I'm essentially the same stuff as you. I like Fale in this tournament. I think he fits his role perfectly, but I thought that Yoshihashi wasn't having a great tournament, so that's kind of where I put the match.
Yeah, I thought he stood up last year and had a good one, and here he was just there, you know? It's like he realized that he's getting no traction whatsoever.
Yeah.
What's the point in putting out? I'm just that guy who, because they have so many damn people in the tournament. I'm not a comedy figure like Yano, but I'm not a top guy either. So if you're not a top guy or the bottom feeder guy, you're fucking, you know, you're a vanilla babyface or vanilla heel. Okay. Then we get Zack Sabre versus Makabe. What you make of this?
This was probably like my favorite. I think it was probably my favorite Makabe match of the tournament, maybe. I think. I thought that Sabre looked really good. I love when he plays his, like, I won't back down to guys that are stronger than me stuff. I love him working over Makabe's legs. And, like, anytime Makabe hits him, it's just really a game changer and puts Sabre down, but he keeps coming back. I like he goes for the octopus but gets rolled into the ropes. I liked Makabe missing the King Kong knee drop just to get caught into the octopus that's since transitioned into the knee bar to play off of all the leg work that's been going on throughout. So I really enjoyed this and thought that Sabre did a really good job working around Makabe, playing to his strengths, making him look strong, really letting him hit his token spots that he does in every match, but actually putting it together in a way that made a match I actually enjoyed. I gave it 3 1/4 star. That's a very low star rating, but this might actually be one of the most important star ratings of Zack Sabre Jr.'s case when it comes to end of the year, you know, wrestler of the year type voting.
Yeah, because Makabe sucks.
Exactly.
Yeah, I gave it 2 3/4, but I thought about the same exact thing that you did. Then we got Ishii versus Nagata. big strikes. Love Nagata catching him in the armbar. Like the near fall after the Nagata kick. Not a fan of your turn, my turn, big moves. I think I use that term every show we do. But it got the crowd into it. 3.5 stars. What about you?
Yeah, it's a pissing contest with a bunch of back and forth. Some of the standoffs are nice. They're just kind of, I buy into them because of the guys, and the crowd was into it, but I gave it 2.75 star because it's not my match.
Yeah, and they, you know, they do it so often where it, even when they just loses it, and then when they try to put it and make it important, it's so, I mean, yeah, the fans eat it up, but in a really a reality context, you don't, for I don't, because we've already seen every match do it. It's not special. Yeah. They made it special. It might work for me. Then we got Naito versus Goto. What do you think of this?
Let's see. Okay, well, I just never really got into this match. I thought that there was like a lot of stuff in here that was decent, but I think that both of them kind of played up the worst parts of their characters against each other. I don't know. I never really got into it. I think that there was, yeah, there's just, these two don't mesh well together for who they are character-wise. I think Goto obviously taking the selling just over the top, and he's just at a level where I don't buy him against Naito at this point because Naito's such a big deal. I gave it 2.5 stars, and I was never really into this match.
Yeah, I gave it 3.25. And at this point, I'm like, why is everyone kicking out of Destino? They're like almost like fucking trash Naito's finisher, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've said it, though. I kind of like it. It's like, instead of the protected finisher, like the one-wing angel or the Rainmaker, he's got the trash finisher that he has to hit multiple times to win.
Is that a finisher?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's like, fuck me. It totally ruined it. I mean, for a guy who's supposed to be a top guy, they don't treat him all that well as a top guy.
They don't, and I'm...
They're not protecting him in the booking, any with that said, I'll say that.
Yeah, they don't protect him, and I've heard that they're not... The kind of behind-the-scenes management are not super high on him. It's just the crowd loves him, so there's nothing they can do about it.
Sell a shitload of merch, yeah. It's like Vince trying to beat somebody, and I mean, it's like Daniel Bryan with Vince.
yeah, exactly.
Oh God. Then we got Tanahashi versus Ibushi. Big feel match. Love Tanahashi on the leg. The clip I liked. Digging Tanahashi. It's Flair and Ibushi is Steamboat in this match. The Kota Cell. I thought Kota selling though was not steam, but Steamboat. I felt it was like a big fuck you that he wasn't going to sell Tanahashi's legwork. I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me! For the legwork to matter, it's got to have consequences. And I mean, are you trying to tell us, Kota, that Tanahashi's legwork it was shit, so therefore you're not going to sell it? I don't understand this. Why didn't you guys go in a different direction? It kind of pissed me off, honestly. I expect better shit from Ibushi. Tanahashi's back to the leg. Pretty vicious in the ropes. The Texas Cloverleaf. Again, Ibushi slagging off the legwork. Bothers the fuck out of me. I hate blowing off basics to get the big pop. And that's what I felt like Ibushi did here. He blew off the basics of the match to get the big pop. Powerbomb kick out was great. Ibushi looks to put over I can't even read my writing. But I still give it 4 stars, even with Ibushi fuck loading it, where this thing could have been a classic if fucking Ibushi bothered to sell some of this shit. What you make of the match?
Wow, I give it 3 stars. Okay. I had the same issues as you.
I'm being generous, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I had the same issues as you, but I think my G1 burnout was making it hard for me to, you know, be generous and nice to stuff. Okay. I thought there was some stiff-looking striking. I thought the crowd was into it, and you're right about the big match feel. These guys had a great match just, you know, 2 years ago in the G1. But I thought that here, a big thing that fucked it for me was the leg selling. And it's another one, I hate to point it out, but I mean, I think it's getting overlooked because in this company he's not being pushed as a top guy. But I think Zack Sabre Jr. showed how to have a good match with Ibushi, that you don't give him the chance to do this stupid shit and no-sell his leg and ruin the storytelling of the match. And then you turn around and Tanahashi is supposed to be this amazing worker, but he's the ace, and he can't do the same thing. It's just, it's kind of frustrating to me, honestly. So, like you talked about, the last ride powerbomb being a two count to then go for the, it's like an upward stalling knee strike that Ibushi uses as his finish throughout. I think he does a really good job putting that move over. And then later on, there's a match where I notice a little wrinkle that I'm like, oh, maybe that's why he's switched to that knee strike finisher. So, this is a G1 burnout situation that I think is why I gave it such a low rating.
Fair enough. Night 12, Sonata, Juice, what you make of it?
This is really interesting because I just talked about G1 burnout, but this match did not suffer from G1 burnout.
Because Juice is awesome selling.
The guy is just, what the fuck, right? I don't like Sonata.
Fucking say, I thought he was the best fucking thing in the G1.
Yeah, I think that Sabre had some really smart matches, but Juice
is up there. Yeah,
but Juice is amazing the whole time. I think if I'm picking my MVP for the tournament, I'm going with Juice. And right here is the proof. I mean, Sonata, I talked about it earlier, not a big fan. This match I gave 4 stars. I think that Juice had Sonata have an amazing match with him based on his selling. Sonata's all over the leg. I thought that they did a really good job here with essentially, you know, Sonata, Okada, whenever they go at it, they always do this kind of mirror-mirror spot. They're both super athletic and equals. That really does a lot for Sonata because Okada's the ace, the top champion, the big deal in the company. So now Sonata's looked at as a big deal. Then they do a very similar thing here with Juice, so now they're putting Juice on that level. So I just love the way that you're transferring that kind of connection in that way. And Juice does such a good job keeping up with him athletically and going back and forth. But the emotion, the selling, Juice rolling on the floor, and he's got... When he gets locked in the figure four and Juice rolls all the way to the floor so that he can get the 10 count to break, which is weird because you would just get a 3 count to break in the ropes, but maybe he just accidentally rolled all the way to the floor. I don't know how the fuck he does this, but Juice he looked normal, and then in the middle of selling, he somehow turned his entire body red. Like he was just beat red, looking like he was being murdered. He's like, looks like a blood vessel is going to pop in his face or something. It was fucking amazing. He's fighting his ass off, looking to get the Pulp Friction, but he almost seems like he can't. There's a ripcord punch that just looks so insane. I mean, Juice's punches.
That was a great fucking, and he uses it as a hope spot, you know? He could actually use the punch as something like, because no one punches well in wrestling anymore. He could actually use that as like a base offense around, and like Lawler.
Yeah.
But yeah, this year is a goddamn hope spot. I mean, it was a beautiful fucking punch.
Oh, God, yeah. So then you get the finish. It's the same thing. The skull end transitioned into the moonsault. But, yeah, like I said, 4 stars. Juice Robinson is a blessing on earth.
Yeah, I give it 3.5. But, I mean, I liked everything you said. I mean, everything about it. It was a damn good match. Then we got Yano, and who the fuck did he wrestle?
Yano wrestled Elgin here.
Yeah, dud. Terrible. What you make of it?
1 star, I guess. Okay. This I think fucked Elgin, and they're talking about it on the last night of their block's tournament rounds. They're talking about how Elgin getting fucked by the crowd here and by the referee here throughout his entire bracket and chances of winning, and it just feels like such a stupid way to do that.
There you go. Suzuki versus Kojima. What you make of that?
I like Suzuki. Just seems like he's actually trying to kill Kojima as they're fighting throughout the crowd. There's like almost no focus work-wise here. There's just a lot of hoopla with all the guys around the ring getting involved. It's fun, solid action, but yeah, there's like no... Suzuki's a weird guy because he can go from like pinpoint accuracy, sniper style, working over a body part to also just all-around crazy brawl. Nothing going on, and that was what this was. I gave it 2.5 stars. What works there is that it makes it feel real because it really depends on what Suzuki's mood is what he's going to do to you or how he, you know, what he's equipped for in the match. So I think it does a good job that he kind of mixes it up that way.
Yeah, I went with you at 2.5 also. I thought the interference was overkill, though. Okada versus Tama Tonga just shows, I give it 2.5, and the jacket stuff was lighthearted and funny. But then I thought the match was very by the numbers. Okay match. Tonga's Pele kick almost missed. People who say Tamatonga is this jewel in the rough, you know, worker. That talking point 2 years ago is still the same talking point I've heard now. Tonga is mediocre worker, average at best. Good on a passable day. Saying he's this like could potentially be a super worker. I think that's a talking point that was brought up a couple years ago, and you're too damn stubborn to admit you were wrong, people. I just don't see it. And not to be able to have a great match with Okada, kind of to me is a check in the Pete Schumacher category. What'd you make?
Here's the thing about Tamatonga. He's like a five tool player or whatever, in that he spends 5 hours playing with his tool. He's got everything he should need, but he doesn't develop and he doesn't get better. And it's just glaring that in his tag team with his brother, like now his brother went from being worse to him to feeling like he's better than him.
And he has no psychology, no storytelling skills. So all he has is his physical attributes. And the older he gets, the more banged up he gets. So that ain't helping.
Yeah.
And he works Russell Circus in New Japan. So he doesn't, it's not exactly, he's not like working regularly almost in a way, you know?
Yeah, he's not working enough to get better. He's not putting effort into getting better. He's definitely, like you said, he's physically gifted in a lot of different ways, like going from looks to also just physicality. His heat here is super boring. He brought some aggression to the ground and pound, but that was it. But realistically, it's just mundane, same old stuff. I gave it 2.5 stars as well. The jacket stuff was fun, I guess, but then he does it again the next fucking match with someone else. So
he had same old shtick. He's formula. Then we got Omega versus Evil. What'd you make of this one?
I actually really enjoyed this match. 3.5 stars, so not like crazy. Don't think I'm going nuts, but I loved Evil choking Kenny. I love they go to the floor and he peels the mat off the floor only for Kenny to body slam him on it. Then Kenny throws him over the rail, comes attacking him, double stomps to see the table get busted up. From there, Kenny is going all over the back. When Evil gets the comeback, Kenny gets his knees up on the senton, and I thought that Evil's facial selling there was amazing. I thought that there's a lot of good action here. I could definitely see people picking apart Kenny Omega's heel work here because a lot of people, he's like a anime character. He doesn't know how to play a real heel. And I'm like, yeah, but he's wrestling Evil. Like, I don't know about him being the most ridiculous character in New Japan, like everyone likes to say. I think that they kind of then drop the selling, the really good selling that they were doing earlier in the match. It just kind of drops off completely, which does suck. Towards the end, there's some impressive action, but I'm losing interest because they're not selling me the drama anymore, and it's turning into spots. And then eventually, looks like Kenny's going for the one-wing angel, but gets countered, and then the match is over. Like I said, really good, but they were setting up a better match than what they ended up delivering for me, and I think that they could have had a much better match if they had followed through on the story that they were telling in the beginning.
I can agree with you. I would 4 stars, though. I enjoyed Omega hurting Evil's back. Omega is focusing on it. I like Omega that he's playing large here. Omega taking his time telling the story so he wasn't rushing through his spots. And, like, that's one of my complaints about Omega. I've always said he needed to go to Steamboat's gear changing class. Well, here he's actually methodical here and actually pacing the match really well. Both guys making the bumps really matter, I thought. Loved Evil snap suplex reverse spot, revenge spot. They made the table spot matter, and they sold it. I thought they did a good job, and a lot of stuff. Sometimes I will admit I thought Bill Kenny spams it off, but here I felt they felt working Evil. I felt grounded Kenny in a way, which is odd, seeing that. Gimmick is way over the top with the name, but I enjoyed the match. Night 13, Ibushi versus Nagata. I give 3.5 stars. Again, another good Nagata performance. Like, I've seen some people go gaga saying Nagata had an incredible G1. I thought he just had a lot of good matches. Nothing he did I thought was blow away, but I thought he was solid throughout, and I thought Ibushi here was really good. What about you?
Yeah, same. 3.25. I thought that they did a good job telling the story here, that the old man can't keep up with the new version, the new school. I think that I did like Nagata's doing some kind of old man tricks to be able to take advantage, and some decent arm work and all that, but yeah, it. I don't think that Nagata really had this blowaway year, honestly, in the G1.
Yeah. Then we get Fale versus Ishii. What you make of this?
I like Ishii just not going to take it from Fale. I've been enjoying Ishii using the rushing shoulder blocks all around instead of kind of nastier strikes and headbutts like he used to. I'm kind of enjoying that from his openings of matches. I like that Fale kind of quickly takes him to the ground, and working him over, grinding on him. Ishii's really working his ass off trying to get the vertical suplex. I think that that's a good story to tell. He's running headlong into the giant, lariat after lariat. Eventually, he's looking for arm bars. And I'm not in. Like, I think that some people may have been excited, thinking that, like, oh, you're gonna love this match because he's going after the arm, and it's Ishii working a different style. But to me, it's so fucking Ishii for him to be going up against a giant, and he decides I'm gonna work over his arm instead of working over his legs and just cut the big man down and do something that makes more sense. It's like, it's just so Ishii that he's going to go for it the hardest way possible, even when he's trying to show off some psychology and use holds. It's like, why? He's bobbing and weaving, hunting and pecking. You know, he flies in and hits some kicks, which I like. Sliding D, goes back into the arm bar, but gets picked up for the rampage bomb, which I like. I thought that was good. Nice cutoff from Fale with the spear that looked good. Everything Fale does makes sense. That's what's so funny. It's like, against this guy who has no logic, Fale's actually bringing in the psychology. He's such a great monster, and he puts him down. I liked the action. I liked everything, but like I said, it really lacks in some ways, but I still gave it 3.75 stars because I really did enjoy what they're trying to do, but maybe it just fits Ishii's character so well that he would never do anything that makes logical sense in a match.
Yeah, I went 3.25, then we got Yoshihashi versus Goto. I went 3.5. I thought the sleeper reversals were cool. Liked the match, worked around the neck, but neither guy lights me up on fire anymore. What'd you make of the match?
Yeah, 2.75. I was going into this, I was like interested to see who's going to be the guy who takes an ass kicking the whole match, because that's what both these guys do in every match. But then the match itself didn't really interest me.
Yeah, and then we got Naito versus Zack Sabre. What'd you make of this?
I liked this, but I think that they really didn't have great chemistry with each other. I actually think this might have been probably the worst match from both guys in the tournament against each other, which is impressive because they both have had good tournaments. There's some slow back and forth. I did Naito, being able to end up getting the win using his multi-move deal like I talked about earlier. I like that he has to hit his move many, many times to get the win. It's just different, honestly, and that's what I like about it, is that he's not just doing what everybody else in the company does, even if in wrestling parlance it's kind of the opposite of what you expect. I like some stuff with Sabre with the neck work, but realistically it didn't end up paying off with anything, so I gave it 3.25 stars. Still enjoyed the action, but like I said, I don't think that these guys really gel too well with each other.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, though. I give it 3.75. I like Naito with the head games. I like that. Love Zach on the neck, and then works the neck and then the ankle. Look, the dude was torturing freaking Naito's neck. Zach's able with so many ways to work a neck, which is, it's not the easiest thing to do, but, man, he had a lot of really interesting spots around the neck, bits around the neck. I thought Naito made a strong comeback. Overall, good stuff. What'd you make of Tanahashi and Makabe?
I was not, like, a huge fan of the match. I gave it 2.5. I think that Makabe, he kind of just no-sells, and he really is, like, bringing it to Tanahashi and all that. And it's like, oh, you know, it's the talking point that they say this is, they protect him this way, and he's so over because anytime they want, they can just give him, they can just give him a title shot, and it works because he's so believable still. And I'm like, motherfucker, Makabe hasn't gotten a title shot since 2013. It doesn't really matter about keeping him protected for title shots randomly because they're not doing it anymore. They just don't use him that way. So it's just, it pisses me off. 2.5 stars.
Yeah, I went 3.25. Night 14, Tamatanga, Yano, checkmark. What about you?
Who cares? Two worst guys in the tournament stinking up the joint together.
Exactly. Thank God for the jacket. I love using it against a top guy and the bottom guy. Yeah, that's creative. That fucking bastard. I mean, that's the thing. There's one thing you can do comedy shtick. I can bust out the jacket with Yano. But you also don't do that against the top guy in the company. All right. That's why he's a bad worker. Or not a bad worker, but that's why he's not a smart worker. Sonata versus Kojima. What you make of that?
There's some decent storytelling type stuff that they're trying to do in this match. But again, Sonata just doesn't... For me, he just doesn't tell the story. It's the lack of facials every time. It really affects his matches for me a lot. I don't know what it is, but this guy... I mean, some people might try to say like it's a weird cultural thing that I don't understand, the stoic nature of Japanese, but there's so many other guys in Japan who I think do a great job. I just think he doesn't. Kojima being the old gunslinger in this match I think was perfect. I don't understand why the referee checks the choke. He checks the arm on the choke. It drops 3 times, and then he does nothing. I thought that was weird.
Yeah, right.
Sonata goes for the moonsault, misses the moonsault. I like Kojima calling for the crowd's energy so that he can power up and hit the clothesline to put him down, but he's not able to pull it off. And he ends up finishing off Kojima. Or Kojima ends up finishing him off with the lariat. The crowd is pretty into him. The closing stretch, definitely Kojima looked great, but I gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, I went 3.5. I was feeling out early. I liked Kojima's lariat. Felt like the, like a finish. Good match. Liked the counters. And then we got Elgin versus Suzuki. I give this 3.75. I enjoyed it. Totally loving the urgency in this match. Suzuki destroying the arm. In a tournament, again, I can understand being a little lenient on the weapons, like the chair here. Like the mixing of power moves versus submissions. Love Suzuki Gun's interference spots here. I thought they made perfect sense and actually helped the match out. Elgin's hope spots were great here. Suzuki's sleeper was awesome. But the finish was a tad abrupt, was my main problem with it. What about you?
Yeah, a lot of the same feelings. 3.75 star. Elgin's power move, cutoffs, all that are great. I love the rampage bomb he does here as a to set up his comeback. Suzuki looking for the chokes to try to kind of cut the wind off of the big man, I think is a great way to go. Makes perfect sense and is something that Ishii could learn from. Use your submissions in a way that makes sense. So yeah, I enjoyed the match.
How would you make a Juice in Omega?
3.75 stars as well. Really great leg work by Omega, I thought, here. Amazing selling from Juice. Emotion comes through strong. Lots of hard work. There's a lot of determination from Juice. Really get a good feeling and a warm heart. It really warms your heart to see him kind of get the big win over the guy. The facial expressions from Juice. I mean, a really big payoff, big win. I mean, yeah, there's obviously a lot of good action here, but this match is all about the drama and the emotion payoff, and that's what gets it that high rating from me.
Yep, I thought I loved it. I gave it 4.25. We got a little back and forth early, and then Omega with an inside-out suplex, and Robinson dings the bad wheel. Omega starts to work it, does a sloppy Bret Hart figure four around the ring post spot. Then he does a Ric Flair knee smasher spot. So if he's gonna, he's at least gonna steal spots. He's stealing it from masters of working a leg. So there you go. Omega using the Flair payback. Love Juice having consequences of using his knees, and then went to block stuff, and he ends up selling it. Love the block of the Big Trigger, and then that punch by Juice was awesome. Finish shocked the hell out of me. Hopefully this the finisher makes Robinson a bigger star in Japan. I hope so, because I felt his work in this tournament earned it. What you make of then we had Okada and Evil, which I liked. I gave it 3 3/4. Okada starts to soften the neck up, you know, setting it up for the Rainmaker. Evil returns the favor and starts softening up Okada. Don't mind the chair spot. Would like it better if Evil had had Bushi out there or a Sonata or not anybody from the group out there as a set up distraction spots. Love Evil's rubbing of the forearms. Then it just fell downhill for me where we get this chair right in front of the ref, just blatant. I mean, especially when they're far away from the camera. I mean, the camera shot, you see everything where the ref sees it, Okada, the distance, just a ridiculous spot. I give it 3 3/4. But yeah, that chair spot was like, come on. What'd you make of the match?
I give it 3.5. I was pretty much there with you on most of what you said. I feel like it's interesting that so many people are really kind of talking up Evil this year. I felt like I was a lot higher on him last year. I thought Evil's violence and really felt like he was stepping it up here, like he was trying to be even more aggressive and violent than he normally is, which I enjoyed because he is in such a big important match, and then he even ends up getting another big upset win. They do back-to-back. I do really enjoy that storytelling and really tying Okada and Omega together so much in that way. And I think I said 3.5 stars. Good stuff, but, you know, like I said, I agree with you. There were some issues. The chair stuff with Evil, it does get on my nerves quite a bit.
Yeah. Then we go to night 15, and we have Zack Sabre Jr. versus Nagata. What were your thoughts here, brother?
I thought that Zack really did a good job playing up his rookie role against Nagata, really making Nagata look like he's able to contain Zack, and he's really one of the first guys to be able to do that for an entire match in the tournament, which I thought was done really well. It looks like Zack is never really able to put a lot of offense together and never really get focused like he normally would. And then eventually he gets put away with a Blue Justice knee and a backdrop driver hold for the pin. And I thought they did a really good job to help Nagata look good. And it was a loss that I think Zack could easily take. And I gave it 3.5 stars.
That went 4.25. I really liked it. The grappling and Nagata with the low-level drop kick and then a big boot combo loved. Zack getting the arm and starts to destroy it. Zack putting on a clinic of how to work an arm. Nagata reverses. Nagata is kicking the fuck out of Zack. Both guys kicking the shit out of the arm. All good stuff. Then we got Ibushi versus Yoshihashi. What do you think of this?
It's me.
I'm sorry. Okay. 3 stars. What you make of it, though?
2.5. I just couldn't take Yoshihashi seriously, honestly, yeah. And that really blew the match for me. Yep. He's just not on Kota's level.
Yeah, what do you make of Foley and Goto?
I would much rather see Foley and Goto, honestly. No, No, I like Foley a lot. 2.25. On paper, nothing about this match is exciting to me, even if Foley has been good. And Goto is okay. It ends up being fine, if not a little boring, with a decent finish. Foley looks strong coming out of it. I didn't really care about this match.
Oh, really? I liked it way better than you. I give it 3 3/4. I like Goto trying to chop Foley down. I like that. He's too much, and he's working over Goto. Foley starts focusing on the leg, liking Goto sell the leg. And I enjoy Foley using his size throughout the match. Yeah, I enjoyed the whole storyline they did and the visuals. And that leads us to Naito versus who did he wrestle? Makabe. I like this too. I gave it a 3 3/4. The nice brawling and Naito working the neck. I thought it was good stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it a 3.5. I thought I liked Makabe's reaction to Naito's bullshit. I think that's a really good, that's a good sign for someone when they can do that. They don't just follow the curve like everyone else. They they bring their character's style to the match, which I think Makabe did a good job here. Brought some real toughness out of Naito, who's putting the boots to Toge. I like that when he's kind of doing the dismissive kicks to Toge on the mat, it pisses him off and he powers up. But I do hate that every time Toge starts his comeback, it always has to have the corner punches instantly. It's like one of the fakest, stupidest things in wrestling, and he does it every time. I liked the kind of a lot of the hard-hitting action throughout it. But this is another one, you know, G1 Burnout kind of makes it feel less. And when you got guys like Toge in here, who I think could easily be replaced by others, it also kind of upsets me. That said, I gave the match 3.5 stars.
What'd you make of Tanahashi and Ishii?
Tanahashi and Ishii, I was kind of expecting Tanahashi to do the heel turn here like he does in some matches, but he never really does go full heel. I liked Ishii working over Tanahashi, selling really hard. I kind of liked having Ishii be on top here for a match, which rarely happens. I like that they kind of show off that they're pretty evenly matched, which is a weird thing to think about, because when any normal person thinks about Tanahashi and Ishii, they probably wouldn't think of them as evenly matched, but the way that they're presented in New Japan, they kind of are, because a lot of times they show, oh, Tanahashi's actually really strong, and then Ishii will kind of show off quickness sometimes as well as his power. So I thought that was pretty good. They didn't really make any use of Tanahashi's injury, but they did kind of, I guess, play into the idea that Ishii was able to be so dominant of him going through. But I would have liked, you know, some arm work, but there's really none here. And then it goes back to what I said about Ishii working the arm of Fale, and then he turns around and doesn't work the arm of the guy with the injured arm. So whatever. There's some weird leg locks. I like that from Ishii later on, as it feels like it's tit for tat. Ishii going after the leg work because of Tanahashi doing the dragon screw and some leg work to him earlier. But again, it plays into Ishii's character. I mean, that's his idea. Instead of attacking the weak part of Tanahashi, he attacks his leg because that's what Tanahashi did to him. There's a one count kick out, because there always has to be. And then there's the two high fly flows back to back to get the pin for Tanahashi. I gave the match 3 stars. I don't think this is making anybody's match of the year list come the end of the year.
I actually liked it. I gave it 4.25. Okay. Yeah, I liked Ishii in full bully role. I liked the low level dropkick by Tanahashi, and Tanahashi works the leg. Love all the leg counters here. But yeah, you brought up some interesting points. But I thought this is having Tanahashi work underneath and having Ishii as the straight up bully and just beat the tar out of him, I enjoyed. Then we get night 16. Good God. What we open up with Kojima versus Tonga, and I gave it 2.25. Been there, done that. What about you?
Let me double check what I gave it. So I gave it 2 stars. Same. I agree with you. Been there, done that. Don't really care.
Yep. Then we got Yano versus Juice. What you make of this one?
I don't really like that Juice is doing all the shenanigans after his big win against Omega, but at least he gets the win. 2 stars.
Yeah, check mark. Evil versus Elgin. I enjoyed it enough. 3.25. What about you?
I love the two big bulls going at each other. 3.5. I like the two big men selling. It really felt like an updated kind of modern version of a Hoss fight, and I think they did a great job with each other.
What about Omega and Sonata?
2.75. It's a lot of big bombs, a lot of strikes. Not really much else. I didn't really get super into this. These guys are both very athletically gifted, but it's not for me.
Yeah, I went 3.75. But holy moly, Okada versus Suzuki. I think it's probably been the best match of the tournament. I love Suzuki destroying the neck. Okada was good selling underneath. Love Okada's drop kick as a key spot. Probably the best I've ever seen them use this drop kick. Usually it's just to elicit a pop, but this was to stop the Suzuki onslaught. So it was actually the smartest positioned drop kick of Okada's life, I think. It was awesome. When Suzuki gets the choke, the crowd went absolute nuts. Love the hope spot, Rainmaker. All the twists and turns, the counters. I thought this was the best slap battle I've ever seen, too. But then it went a little too long, and then I came back to my senses. It wasn't. But I give it. I would have gone the full five if that slap battle didn't go as long as it did. Because I thought the layout, the structure, everything meant stuff. But that slap battle just went too long, and one slap too much, not to taste out of my mouth, and gave it 4 3/4. What about you, man?
I liked their other match just slightly more, but only slightly. I thought that this match was completely different. It didn't have any of that like kind of torture porny stuff. I think that there's something about Suzuki that he comes across almost euphoric at times at how much joy he gets from causing pain to others, especially to Okada here. Lots of really, really great selling from Okada, the face, the wincing in pain at the start that that really gives Suzuki that kind of shark-smelling blood as he then starts attacking the neck right afterwards, I thought was great. From there, I thought that there was, you know, the signature spots with the crowd popping hard for both. But yeah, I gave this 4 stars. I think that I really liked the finish with it being the count out, or not count out, but the time limit, I think was done really well with Okada was looking to get the pin on the Rainmaker, but he just couldn't get it. And you kind of told that same story against Omega just recently, and now you do it again here with Suzuki after they had such a long match earlier in their year. It makes perfect sense.
What did you make of Makabe versus, we're on night 16. What did you make of Nagata versus Fale?
Night 17, first match, right? Yeah. Fale
17,
versus Nagata.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Nagata is determined to, from the start, to take it to Fale, but Fale is like, no, and he throws him on the floor, brawls him around the building. Love Nagata. He's working the whole time, looking for a chance to do anything to Fale. The crowd pops fucking huge for the attempt at the Nagata lock, but Fale grabs the ropes instantly, and you just see there that like he's just too overmatched. I mean, he fought like hell, but there's nothing he could do. Fale cuts him off with the spear. I love the Fale spear every time. I think it does such a great job. Puts him away with the bad luck fall. I can definitely see some people wanting Nagata to get that big win at the end, but I kind of liked it for sending him off into the sunset, even though he's probably not actually. And then they do the respect pose off. I gave it 3.5 stars. I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I went 3. Definitely the crowd was just into it, but then they were kind of deflated after Nagata's loss, but they cheered him and they made it special. Makabe versus Yoshihashi, gave it 2 3/4. You know, whatever. What'd you think of it?
I gave it 2 stars. Same thing. Whatever. Right. I don't care.
What about Zack and Ishii?
I like this better than their match in Long Beach.
Ditto.
I thought that Zack really just at times looked like he was torturing this little guy. I liked Ishii really firing off. Multiple shots from Zack would equal one big shot from Ishii to put him down, but Zack will just stay focused on the arm the whole time. I loved the kind of drop toe hold, standing drop toe hold, that's then instantly transitioned back to the arm. Nice, brutal looking arm work with great selling from Ishii the whole way through. I liked Zack doing like a diamond dust that he rolls all the way through instead of a cutter into a arm bar. Again, focusing on the arm. I liked Zack being essentially able to catch anything and counter it into some kind of arm work. He does that so seamlessly and so smoothly that at times it comes across choreographed but also real because of just the way he's able to pull it off. He really rides that line very well. And then when he's really taking it to him, twisting him up with kind of every part of Ishii's body is just wrapped up as he's just taking him out, and I can't tell if Ishii passed out or if he verbally submitted, but he put him away, and this is just a wild and fun match all the way through. I gave it 3 3/4 star.
Yeah, I went 4. And it was all the same reasons you said. I really enjoyed the story they were telling here. That leads us to Goto versus Ibushi. Another good fun match. I thought it needed more time though. I give it 3.5. What about you?
3.5 also. I thought it was a fun sprint. They made it. They worked it that way. But, it didn't really feel important, but it was fun.
What about the main event? Tanahashi, Naito.
3 3/4. The crowd lives and dies for Naito from the beginning. They're going crazy and just love this guy. And then I thought it was interesting that, again, Tanahashi stays pretty much completely face, working the whole match, as the underdog babyface getting worked over. Lots of arm work from Naito. I just thought it was really interesting, and it kind of affected my enjoyment of the match. Then by the end, when the crowd is cheering on Tanahashi, chanting "Go Ace, Go Ace," I'm like, okay, well they turned the crowd. They were able to get the crowd firmly behind Tanahashi by the end. But at the same time, it's really interesting that they went that way instead of what they normally do, and just have Tanahashi work heel in a setting like this. Love the Gloria, one of my favorite moves from Naito. He hits it here. It looks good. I like Naito spitting in Tanahashi's face to fire him up. I think Naito was doing that pretty much every match for a while. Now cutting it back, only doing it every now and then, I think is good. Really liked the dragon screw leg whip from Naito sitting on the top rope to set up the like a torture Texas clover leaf, which was really good. The pain on Naito's face is really, you could really buy into it big time. There was a spot where Tanahashi sends Naito off the ropes, and then he runs off for a crisscross, and Naito looks like he's jumping up, stutter-stepping, looking for a move. I thought that brought an air of realism to the match. Like, Naito didn't realize that Tanahashi wasn't there, then gets caught out of nowhere from the other side with the sling blade. I thought that the finish was super hot. Naito gets the win with a Destino counter to set up a full Destino, and I give it 3 3/4 stars.
I went 4.5. I really liked it. I liked all the storytelling, the psychology, that high fly flow to the arm, selling the arm after the high fly flow. I thought Naito's arm look times looked was really wicked. Overall, it's really good stuff. And that's it for our G1. I don't know if I don't know if we have time to go into who are their best workers, but guys who impressed us, I would have to say Juice impressed me. I felt Zack Sabre had a good tournament. Or two of the guys who really stood out to me. What about you?
Yeah, so far that's who I'm with. Juice, Zack Sabre, Suzuki's looked good. Omega.
I liked Ichii. I don't think you did very much.
He's had a couple good matches, but a couple matches I didn't like. Ibushi, I think, has looked really good coming back. Yeah. It's really interesting. I think more my thing is that there's some deadwood in here that could be really cold. And it's kind of annoying to me because they have no outside guys. And I think a lot of times what made G1 fun for a while was outside guys coming in, and they just don't do that. I mean, the closest thing we have is Ibushi and Zach, and they're both actually full-time guys. Just one's kind of new, and one's been out with an injury. So.
Yeah, for me, the story was, we talked about it before. I was like, yeah, I'm really excited to see what Juice could do working different people each night with how his new skill set has been. So for that story, I thought it was great, because he felt like a new guy in a way, because he's not been treated as like a top guy or near the top guy. And I hope coming out of this tournament, I hope he gets renewed pushed out of this, because his work earned it to me anyway.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So yeah, I'm pretty much there with you on almost everything, I think.
All right, cool. Well, we'll call it quits then. And Timothy, anything you want to plug?
So I mentioned earlier I was on Burning Spirits over on Voices of Wrestling. Check that out. We did a mid-year kind of review. Got a pod blast coming out shortly with Quentin again talking about Will Ospreay versus Robbie Eagles in Australia. I've got pretty cool interview, or actually an episode of Top Beer with Dan Scotty from Sports Entertainment Shrinks. First time having a guest on that show, so I definitely say check that out. That'll be out in a couple days here when you're listening to this. But you can always find everything if you follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Cool. Follow me at Titans O' Wrestling. Remember, October 13th, 14th, Mid-Atlantic, CWF Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest. Be there, be square. Have a great week. Later.